Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Then press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
Sure, it's Friday night, but that is no reason not to tune in to NWCR Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with Robert the Infidel Garding. Being around since 2007, we patriots have watched as the left and many on the right have done nothing to stop what is going on to destroy our great nation. Ideas abound with our society, but most are horrible at best. But there are good ideas out there if you know where to look. Join us every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for a dose of reality from behind the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world. That's NWCR Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday evenings, where you can call in at 646-478-5284 and give your solutions to what is ailing this country.
We can love. It's such a shame I've I'm Eric Shawn in New York. We're breaking into Sunday Morning Futures with breaking news from Plains, Georgia, where former First Lady Rosalynn Carter has died. Mrs. Carter was 96 years old. The Carter Center just making that announcement one day after revealing the former First Lady had entered hospice care at home in Plains. Back in Maine, the Carter Center said that the former First Lady had been diagnosed with dementia. You know, the Carters wed back in 1946. They are the longest married presidential couple in history, 76 years. Her husband, former President Jimmy Carter, well, he, of course, has been ailing. He is 98 years old, and he entered hospice earlier this year. Chief political correspondent Brett Baer takes a look now at the life of the former First Lady.
Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter was born in the small town of Plains, Georgia in 1927, the same place as her husband, the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear.
And even though the couple only spent one term in the White House, Rosalynn Carter's effect is still felt in Washington.
I'd never doubted that he could be a great president.
While her husband was working on Middle East peace and trying to stem rising gas prices, First Lady Rosalynn Carter was busy consulting with the president on both domestic and foreign affairs. She even attended cabinet meetings, sitting in any available seat. Jimmy and I were always partners, she once said. In 1977, she visited Central and South America as the president's personal representative, holding high-level meetings with leaders on issues like human rights, beef exports, and drug trafficking. But the First Lady's lasting impact is the role she played as honorary chair of the President's Commission on Mental Health.
That was the beginning of a lifelong crusade for me, to try to help make life better for people with mental illnesses.
Mrs. Carter, who started her work on mental health as the First Lady of Georgia, oversaw a 20-person advisory board and developed 30 task forces for the commission. Her work resulted in a final report recommending the implementation of the largest reform of mental health legislation in close to three decades. Rosalynn Carter also made sure to tend to the more traditional duties of her job as First Lady and mother to the Carter's daughter, Amy. She insisted Amy go to public school in Washington, D.C., and she began what is now normal for all First Ladies, a staff and office in the East Wing of the White House. Most of Mrs. Carter's work has been done since she and her husband left Washington after losing the 1980 election to Ronald Reagan. She spent over 20 years on the board of the Carter Foundation in Atlanta, and both she and her husband worked on building houses for Habitat for Humanity. There is nothing more important, she said, than a good, safe, secure home. When President Carter continued to travel in the years after his presidency, Rosalynn Carter went along with her husband, visiting China in 2010, meeting with former Palestinian President Yasser Arafat in 1990, and attending the Democratic National Convention in New York in 1992. Rosalynn Carter also continued to spend time in Washington, meeting with her successors. She was one of several women, family members of past presidents who were honored by First Lady Michelle Obama at a Mother's Day event at the White House in 2010.
Thank you.
In her later years, Rosalynn joined her husband in his work for the Carter Center. They assisted with international conflict resolution and observed elections such as the historic referendum for South Sudan in 2011. They also focus on health programs, fighting to prevent and eliminate neglected tropical diseases like guinea worm and river blindness. Through it all, Rosalynn encouraged her husband through his brain cancer battle and recovery.
We've had an outpouring of support and prayers, and it's been really, in spite of all that's going on, it's been really kind of wonderful just to know that we had that kind of support.
Rosalynn Carter was diagnosed with dementia at age 95. The Carters were married for more than 75 years. They built a family with four children and more than a dozen grand and great-grandchildren. In Washington, Brett Baer, Fox News.
Again, the sad news to report to you this afternoon. Rosalynn Carter passing away in Plains, Georgia. She was 96 years old. You know, Mrs. Carter, through those years, she had a nickname. Steel Magnolia. If you remember that, she was a strong force behind her husband's political career, rising from a peanut farmer. He, of course, went to Annapolis, who was a nuclear engineer on submarines, started his first campaign for the state Senate in Georgia. She was by his side at that time. At a time in the South when he embraced blacks and whites, involving African-Americans in his campaigns and reaching out to them. He was elected governor and then president in 1976. Mr. Carter at the time saying to the American people, "I will never lie to you," in a sense, trying to establish a new sense of ethics in the wake of President Richard Nixon's resignation and then the election of Gerald Ford, or actually the appointment of Gerald Ford, who then succeeded Mr. Nixon in the presidency. Jimmy Carter rising from the plain spokenness of Plains, Georgia to the White House. And, of course, the controversies dealing with the Iranian hostage crisis that he endured for 444 days. She also participated in many of their charitable attributes, Habitat for Humanity, building homes for the less fortunate, traveling the world for the Carter Center. Mr. Carter, known for the Camp David Accords as well as for his participation in the human rights. Chip Carter, one of their sons, others, Jack, involved in politics, elected to local politics in Georgia. And what is shocking to a lot of people, I think, is that she was just, the Carter Center announced a couple of days ago that she was suffering from dementia, entered into hospice. This all the time while her husband has been in hospice care since earlier this year. He is right now 98 years old. She was 96. And even after serving in the White House, they returned to their home in Plains, Georgia, which they bought in 1961 for $167,000. He was $1 million in debt when he left the White House because of the peanut business.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to click to subscribe to the Fox News YouTube page. This is the only way that I know for sure that you're not going to miss it.
All right, everybody. Looks like we have a full house. The gang is all gathered here in the chat room. Good to see everybody. You are tuned in to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Thank you so much for making your way here tonight. We got several people also in the switchboard. Sad news. I don't normally like to open the show up with sad news, but have to pay my respects to former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. And, you know, unfortunately, with Jimmy Carter also having health, you know, in being in hospice care and his health battles, I would fully expect that it won't be too much longer before we lose Jimmy Carter as well. And I think, you know, even most of us conservatives think what we want about his presidency. He might not have been a great president and everything. But personally, I think we can all agree that he and Rosalynn were genuinely good people. They really tried to be humanitarian. They devoted a lot of their time and energy toward trying to, you know, help this world be a better place. So, rest in peace to her, and my prayers go out to Jimmy Carter. That's something to be said, too. I mean, if I think probably one of their biggest accomplishment is, you know, being together for like 77 years. How often does that happen nowadays? You know, how often does somebody in these times, you know, meet somebody, marry them, lifelong partners, you know, married for that long, that's just so rare. And so I think, you know, overall, that's probably both Jimmy and Rosalynn's biggest accomplishment is just, you know, being lifelong partners like that. So rest in peace to her. And before that, Dolly Parton, I had to play it, Purple Rain. Of course, I'm a huge Prince fan, I'm also a huge Dolly Parton fan. So, combination of the two, right? I mean, I've been a Dolly Parton fan since I was a little girl, so even before I was a Prince fan, right? So, you know, the combination of the two, I had to play that for my musical entrance into the show. So, yeah, lots of other stuff to talk about tonight. If you looked at the show description online, I've listed a bunch of stuff, of course. Rosalind just passing away today. I didn't add that to it, but let's do the rundown of some of the things that have transpired this week. Tyranny not to be thankful for, because obviously, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up on Thursday. And so just give you the rundown on what's been transpiring this week. Communist dictator welcomed by our wannabe dictator, Poopy Pants Biden, in the wannabe communist state of California. Of course, I'm talking about Xi from China. So that was fun. And obviously, like, you know, so they really did a bang-up job of cleaning up that whole area in San Francisco, you know, taking out all the homeless camps, clean, you know, power washing all the sidewalks and streets and everything, and making the whole area look so pretty. Are we placing any bets on how long it takes for it to return back to the awful state it was in? Let's see. Next up, Biden, it comes out, Biden will not face any charges for his classified documents, storing them in his garage, at his, you know, Penn Biden Center, and wherever else. So, you know, he gets a pass, but of course, Trump is still being held under the bus for his documents that were found, even though, you know, he was a president. And but Biden wasn't president. He had no business having those classified documents, especially for as long as he did, and storing them in his garage. But, you know, Biden gets a pass, of course. Then Speaker Mike Johnson this week released 40,000 hours of January 6th footage. And so I'm sure most people listening have seen that. Yeah, like, it's crazy. You know, the footage, I'm sure some of you have seen it. More footage of just, you know, them being let in, the police, you know, escorting them around, you know, being pretty friendly, back, you know. Sure really looked pretty peaceful to me. All that whole narrative of the January 6th commission, that whole farce, obviously was, you know, it just shows how selective they were in trying to paint this picture that, you know, it was just, all these crazy insurrectionists that, you know, Trump told them to come in and do it and all this bull crap. It was just a horse and pony show, and with, you know, there's so many hours of this footage that people are still combing through. It's just like, I wonder how much more stuff is going to be coming out. And let's see. Then also, I saw, not surprised by this, the Pentagon Department of Defense fails yet again. It's sixth audit in a row now. But you know what? I've seen this article. Okay, they failed the sixth audit in a row, 6 years in a row failing their audit. After 5 years, the tally was about $1.8 trillion. Don't know what happened to it. But in the articles that I've seen, no articles have estimated how much that tally is this year. How much did they lose this year? Why are they not giving that information? Or maybe they don't even know. Like, is the Department of Defense so screwed up that they can't even estimate how much money they can't allocate? Is it that bad, really? So, yeah, we can get into that later, maybe, possibly. Then I also happened to see that the U.S. Supreme Court chickened out again and reject another clot shot mandate case, a case that, I think this is like their third or fourth clot shot mandate case that they have passed, that they've declined to hear. So, you know, it's like it's like the cockroach in the room or something. Like, they just don't want to touch it. I don't get it. And they really should. So anyway, we can get into that later as well. Meanwhile, the IRS is sending out 30 million tax forms to people that have earned $600 or more via PayPal or Venmo. So, you know, the DOD can fail its sixth audit in a row to the tune of probably somewhere around $2 trillion total now. But man, oh man, you know, thank you, Biden. Thank you, Democrats. Because, you know, you got to go after those people earning only $6,000. If you guys all remember, the threshold used to be, I believe it was $12,000. And then thank you to the American Rescue Plan Act. That threshold was dramatically decreased to only $600. And we can get into that later, too. But you know who that's going to hit the most. You know, this isn't going after the rich. This isn't the rich paying their fair share, folks. This is going after gig workers. This is going after people that sell some of their, you know, old stuff on eBay, that kind of a thing, just to put a little money in their pocket. So now they're sending out these tax forms. It's going to cause a bunch of confusion. Nobody really knows what the hell to do with these things. So I'm just, it sickens me. Like, this is not only as, you know, how we all feel about the income tax, it's already unconstitutional. It's already a huge fraud. And now it's going to be scamming people even more for such. I'm really, like, not happy about this. In other news, Paul Pelosi's attacker was found guilty by a jury this week. So I kind of was thinking, you know, I'm like, I wonder if Poopy Pants Biden and Z stopped on over to the Pelosi house to celebrate with them after their meeting for that guilty verdict. And let's see, also the U.S. has wrapped up an antitrust case against Google, yet another one. And then also in semi-local news, a federal judge has another ruling against Native tribes that have been fighting the lithium mine that they want to be digging around in northern Nevada, southeast Oregon. So, you know, the Native tribes are fighting it because the area is the site of, what was it, I think, like a 1895 massacre. I'll have to look up the article if we want to get into that later. But and so, you know, they're trying everything that they can, but this is probably the largest lithium deposited area, possibly globally. So you know that there's a lot of people salivating over that area to mine it and rip it up. So that's what I had in the rundown of what's transpired this past week. As always, there's more than enough to talk about. And also, in other news, let's see, one more thing that I wanted to bring up. I'm going to bring Valerie into the mix here as well in just a moment. She has joined us tonight as well, so resuming her co-host chair. So we'll bring her on in. And real quick before I do that, one short thing that I want to play. This is to you, Valerie.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Valerie. Happy birthday. Woohoo! What you doing, girl?
Turning about 15 different shades of red at the moment. That's what I'm feeling. Really? Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you.
Have you had a good day?
It hasn't been bad. I ended up working today and then got home, ended up staying a bit later, and then got home just before this started, and then had kiddo stuff to wrap up while all of the beginning stuff was going on. So it's been a nonstop day so far. But it hasn't been bad. It's been pretty good.
I mean, I didn't really expect you to be on tonight. You know, I didn't know it was going to be your birthday because, of course, you didn't say anything. Shame on you. But then I saw on Facebook the notification. I'm like, what? It's her birthday. And so I messaged you. I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to be out celebrating your birthday, you know, you're forgiven. You can take the night off. But here
well,
you are.
I completely forgot that Facebook, like, I had my birthday. I thought it was completely private. So, like, nothing would, yeah, I didn't see until a little bit ago that, nope, quite a few people know that it's my birthday now. I was content to just let it slide, but nope, that didn't work out too well. Lovely Facebook settings.
Well, I'm glad that you didn't adjust your... because otherwise I never would have known. And I wouldn't be able to wish you happy birthday, and I wouldn't be able to play a song for you. And I decided to upload that happy birthday song instead of singing it myself. You know, that's your birthday present is not hearing me sing it.
Well, thank you. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't heard you sing yet. So I'll take your word for it.
I used to have a much better voice than I do now, but, you know, being a smoker and stuff, my voice isn't nearly as good as it used to be, so I'll spare you. So, yeah, we got the gang is in the house here. Let's see. Before I start bringing people on in, anything this week that you wanted to mention before we start going down different rabbit holes with all the stuff that's gone on this week on my end?
Oh, goodness. Who knows? I know locally we've got, there was a federal judge that ruled in favor of some environmentalists that are wanting to protect native salmon spawning whatever stuff. And so they are drawing down rivers around 13 dams here locally, and there's a meeting coming up tomorrow night for the community to get a chance to be present. And it's the Army Corps of Engineers, they're the ones that are doing the drawdowns, and they're tied by the court orders. But you know, it's ironic that it's environmentalists that have pushed this, and the result has been it killed off in the Sweet Home area. There's Green Peter Reservoir and Foster Lake there. It killed off all the kokanee. I mean, there's photos of literally thousands of fish that are just dead. People's water out of their taps are turning horrible shades of brown. There's people that the amount of bleach or chlorine, whatever it is, that they are having to use to make the water, quote-unquote, safe. People are washing their clothes and it smells like they put a ton of bleach in there, or they're using the restroom and it just reeks of bleach. I mean, people aren't wanting to bathe their kids in it. People's pets have gotten sick. They're not using it to make their babies' bottles. The rivers, there's a photo that somebody took. It's amazing. It's where the Saniam and another river converge. And one side is this beautiful, clear river, and then the other side where it merges is just this muddy, disgusting brown. And it's just disgusting.
That. Yeah, I mean, it really is like night and day, you know. And you know, for people that don't know, these rivers are like mountain rivers. These rivers are like normally
virtually crystal clear, you know, fresh mouthwater.
Yeah.
And yeah, I saw a photo of what you're talking about where the two converge, and it's just like, wow. You know, it looks like somebody like dumped a bunch of sewage in there, you know, like overflow toilet kind of looking, like, you know, that's how bad it looks. It's horrible.
Yeah. And it is a vivid, there's a stark difference between the two. It's not just a little bit, oh, you can tell. No, it is, I mean, it's like black and white, day and night difference where the two converge. And, I mean, there have been wells that have dried up in some communities, and it's all in the name of saving these native fish, which, according to one person who's local to the area, most people don't even remember there being native salmon up in some of these parts, but yet, you know, they're doing this for the salmon. Meanwhile, they killed off literally all of the kokanee in these lakes. I mean, it's just, they're doing more harm than they are good, which is kind of par for the course. And the judge is, I don't know what judge it was, but the only word I've got for him is inept and, well, I've got two, inept and imbecile. That's about it. So the toll that it is taking on these communities is, it should be criminal. It really should. And their hands are tied. There is not much that they can do. This was a decision that was passed down, I think, in 2021. So they're kind
of
stuck.
You know, I mean, you know, Oregon is like the epitome of, you know, if government can screw something up royally, it will. I mean, and Oregon just shows it time and time and time again. I don't think anybody can really argue with me on that one.
Oh, no,
it's,
they have messed up the
ridiculous
forest. Yeah, they've messed up the forest. They have shut down places that were open to the public to protect these endangered species or whatever that aren't even native to the area. There are so many things that they do here in Oregon, and I'm all about being good stewards of the environment, but this is not good stewardship. This is insane. It's damaging things, having a human toll that it's taking, and I wish there was some sort of recourse. I mean, outside of people actually getting together and doing something, getting in the way of something, or who knows what, I don't see what they can do at the moment. Even if they were to look into a lawsuit, that's going to take how long? I don't know that they'd be able to get an injunction and at least get it to stop right now. But this is supposed to continue for a minimum of 3 years. They're supposed to do these drawdowns every single year. And it's disgusting. So that's the only real big thing that that's come up locally that I've been really paying attention to at the moment. So, and we still don't have a ruling. We don't have a decision yet on Measure 114. That is expected by the 22nd. That does bring up one thing on that, though, that I'm not sure if you're aware of. So the defendants, the state, had filed basically like these affidavits presenting new information to the judge, stating that the FBI has granted an exception or whatever for a period of time to comply with the background check aspect of Measure 114, that previously there was no way, the FBI said, no, we're not doing this, so there was no way for the permit system to actually go into place. Well, I guess the FBI has made an exception.
Yeah, I did see that, and now the FBI is like, okay, well, we'll help you out, you know.
Well, I think it's this whole thing, I had people asking me about it, and I'm like, I have to, because initially it sounds like, okay, this could be bad news, and I had to chuckle at it because the challenge to Measure 114, the state wanted the judge to consider it only as a facial challenge, meaning on its face as it is written, is it constitutional, not how it will be implemented, not as it will be applied. The plaintiffs objected. They wanted it to be viewed as an as-applied challenge, like, hey, take into consideration how it's going to be put into effect. Well, the judge ruled with the state and said that, no, he will only consider it as a facial challenge on its face as it's written as a constitutional. Well, this information that the state has just recently presented to the judge is only relevant to an as-applied challenge, how it will be implemented. It has nothing to do with the facial challenge that they requested it be taken as in the first place. So now when they go to appeal it, they can't sit there and say, well, the judge didn't consider this information when he made his ruling, because the judge is looking at it as a facial challenge like they asked. And this is only relevant to an as-applied challenge. So it makes me chuckle because it's just the state doing what they do, trying to find little loopholes or sneak stuff in or whatever the case may be. Something doesn't work out the way they want, and then all of a sudden they're going to try and reverse course and not play by their own rules. And thankfully we have a judge that overseeing this case that I believe will see through that and rule accordingly. So at least he now will have an opportunity, if he so chooses, to address the specific issue the state recently brought up about the FBI in his opinion, and then we'll see how it goes. So that's the other major thing, really, here in Oregon at the moment.
I wish that, you know, I just find it, like, kind of frustrating that we should get a ruling on this, you know, the day before Thanksgiving, you know, on Wednesday. You know, it's like when most people are, you know, busy, like, getting ready for their Thanksgiving plans, you know what I mean? And they're not going to be paying attention. And so, you know, I was hoping that maybe he would, you know, make a decision sooner than this, you know, so that people are actually around to see what the decision is. I am hoping that, you know, I'm sure everybody's hoping that he rules against all of 114 and continues to stall it. I don't, you know, most of us, really don't want to see that abomination take effect. Yeah, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I did see that earlier and I didn't even think about it for tonight. And I thought I had posted something about it on my Lucid Libertarian page on Facebook, but apparently I didn't. You know, like I read it and I thought I posted it, but apparently I didn't. I'm glad that you brought that up today.
No worries. Well, in the November 22nd date. So he had 60 days to make his ruling, and obviously, so he closed the record on September 25th. So that would have put us at November 25th. Well, that's a Saturday. Friday, everybody's closed day after Thanksgiving. Thursday's the 23rd, which is Thanksgiving. So November 22nd was the latest that basically – I think it was probably a good thing, as difficult as it is to wait. I would much rather wait and have a well-authored opinion that can withstand the scrutiny of the Oregon Supreme Court if he rules against Measure 114 than to have him rush it and potentially miss something. So as tough as it is to wait, I'm more than happy to. Hopefully if that's a ruling against Measure 114, though. Otherwise,
Sooner. Yeah, like if he was going to say, yeah, okay, you know, let's go for it, then he probably would have issued a ruling sooner. But, you know, he knows that every single word of his decision is going to get scrutinized. You bring up a good point. And so, you know, he needs to be very diligent to craft it so it can't be easily picked apart, put it that way. So with all that said, Mike and Gunslinger have been raising their hand in the switchboard here for a while. So let's go ahead and bring them on in to join this party. And then anybody else that's on the switchboard, press 1 to raise your hand. We're happy to bring you on and get the party started. So Mike and Gunslinger, you are on.
Hello, party.
So you talked about earlier all the footage that's out there from the J6 thing, which, by the way, I put the link to all that footage into the chat room early. So whenever you feel like it, you can go get that link and go and take a look at it. This is the type of stuff that me and Gunslinger and at the time, Boyd and a few other people would get on a Skype call and just watch footage like we used to do during the Summer of Love, you know, out there in Seattle and Portland and stuff, you know. So, and by the way, one of the big things with this footage is there's a particular, and I haven't found it yet, but there was a guy that did it on a live stream on YouTube that he took a look at a particular thing, 5-minute thing of footage where there was the police brought into a room a guy who was dressed in a black bike motorcycle helmet and was facing the camera and was handcuffed. And they bring him in. He bends down to, one, help them get him off the handcuffs, number one. Number two, because he was facing the camera, to have his face not be seen through the front part of the helmet on the camera. And then after that, he turns around, fist bumps the cops who take the cuffs off of him, and just casually walks out and does whatever. You know, so.
Yeah, casually like, okay, job well done. Yep, I saw that. Yeah, it's pretty compelling.
Remember when they almost shook hands, you know, the nut and the knuckle butt thing? It was very clear. It was all set up. Remember when you should have seen that? You know, it's like, yeah, job well done. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
yep.
Sure.
And bastards. And you're telling me, if he would have just stood up and just, those are some of the best security cameras ever. I don't care how dark that front part of the helmet is, the faceplate, you know, the plastic shield that, you know, covers your face, you know, I don't care how dark that is, those cameras in that Capitol are going to be able to see through that faceplate, piece of plastic on front of that helmet. So, you know, that's why he bent down, because he didn't want those cameras to see his face.
Well, wait a minute. That's one of the points above 50%, but the majority of it is they took the handcuffs off and they almost shook hands, you know, knuckle butt thing, whatever you want to call it, handshake, whatever. That indicates, yeah, you did a good job. You ever shook hands with anybody? Yeah, glad to meet you. Yeah, you did a good job. Handshake. That's what that proves. You know, whether it could be Santa Claus in that helmet, at this point it really doesn't matter. Okay, it's the fact that they knew it. These were actors, probably paid actors, no doubt. Okay, because why would they do that? Why would they take the cuffs off of them? Why would they? Oh yeah, good job, buddy. Pat yourself on the back. Why would they do that if it wasn't staged? You got to be able to look through this shit. I mean, you have to have extreme situational awareness, okay? And anybody that carries a gun, like me, why I'm called the gunslinger, I have supreme situational awareness. I'm always aware of everything around me, all to a point that, unfortunately, my head doesn't spin around like a damn circle, okay? You have to. Okay? And this is the same thing. That's what I noticed right then. Bam. Put the cuffs off. Congratulated him. A lot of people doesn't see that. Go ahead.
Yep. And the other thing you need to notice is those cuffs that he, you know, shook hands or fist bump or whatever. They also had masks on. So there. So you can't tell who they were. So that's the thing. And again, I will say again, that's some of the best
equipment you can. I'm guaranteeing you, if they wanted to, they could do some stuff with it to see who these people are.
Well,
you know, they could see.
When it,
I bet you they know who these are. They are anyway. I bet you.
When it comes to the government, you know they have an open-end checkbook. They have unlimited money. I have installed surveillance cameras, they're called CCTVs, closed-circuit televisions. I'm a retired master electrician engineer. Okay, I did it from – installed a bunch of them, every angle that you can think of. Okay? So, yeah, these things, they don't buy cheap things. Okay? Trust me. These are top-of-the-line, modern technology that could see right through your clothes, okay? So, and I'm sure they do, all right? The way they do with the technology they have today. And I'm a very upkeeper on the technology, okay? But, you know, like I said, they have unlimited money. They don't care what it costs, okay? They don't care what it costs. And that goes from your state capital all the way down to your local government. Okay, even your school, they have unlimited money. My high school, that's 4 miles, about 5 miles from where I'm sitting over here. When I was doing electrical work, I did some work at the high school over there. Just minimum, really small stuff. Only cost me $95 in materials. I charged them $1,200. Paid off like a slot machine. It only took about an hour. Imagine making $1,200 in an hour. Not bad. Work for the government.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, work for the government. Fucking fastest money I ever made in my life. $1,200, boom. In an hour, and I hardly didn't have to do anything. And about $90-some in material. So you go figure that. And it's all across the country. All across the country. Amazing, isn't it? Why do you think a toilet seat costs $1,500? A hammer costs $1,500. When you go down to your local Home Depot and get it for what? $5, same thing. See the difference? Big difference here. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, when we were having problems with our Ring doorbell, and it turned out that it was a little, like, module that sends power from places that need to be replaced. So it hooks onto like the air conditioner up top, up in the attic, right? And it sends power to the doorbell. So what happened was the guy goes over to a hardware store here, picks up that little module for, I don't know, $6, $8, $10, whatever it was at the time, comes back, installs it, only charges us, you know, $25 for the labor, and he's done, right? If that happened to somebody at, you know, the government's house, that little piece wouldn't have costed $10. It would have costed, I don't know, $150, and they would have charged. Yeah, they would have cost you $150, and they would have charged. The labor would have been, you know, $800 in labor.
Oh yeah,
you know,
at least, yeah. Oh yeah,
that's the way it works,
and that's the way they do it. Okay, I even had different charge scales when I was in business for 10.5 years. Okay, the lower areas of Dallas and Fort Worth that I dealt with, they had one price range. Now, if I went up here in North Dallas where the Richie Rich is, okay, you know, living in, you know, $750,000+ houses, okay, which I have a number of times, man, they had their own scale, okay? I'd charge easy $100 an hour, and that was back in the freaking 80s and early 90s, $100 an hour, boom. I don't care if I had to flip a breaker. Just a simple flip of a breaker. $100, man. Boom. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that goes all in business. I mean, it just does in plumbing, electrical. I don't care what kind of business you are in. you're going to have different charges for different areas of the areas that you work. That's natural, you know, just the way it is in business. You know?
Hello?
Ring. Hello? Hey, you on calling?
Ding dong.
I am trying to call Montana Joe because he's having a issue calling in.
Hello, hippie.
Hello.
Thanks, Barbara.
No problem. I saw you pop on and then you dropped, and then I got your text message to try to dial you in. So hopefully let's cross our fingers that it works.
Yeah, well, it worked. It worked Tuesday. Let's see if it works now.
By the way, Glenn, you're right. Because over the last, say, 5 or 6 days, we had an outage, electrical outage here at our, you know, weather, whatever it was, and our hand tap popped on. Well, we have a delay, our generator, you know, natural gas power generator popped on. Yeah. But we have a delay that, you know, five, ten second delay that was supposed to work, and it didn't work. And as it turned out, the guy from the generator company comes over and looks at it, and the breaker inside the outside box had tripped, turning that breaker off that would be the switcher, right?
Yep. Way it works.
All we had to do was open that box, flip that breaker, and close the box, and he's gone. Right?
I bet you learned a lesson for next time, would you? Go out there and just flip the breaker back on. Lesson learned.
Well, he didn't really charge us, but if that was a government job, I guarantee you he would have charged him an arm and a leg for it, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Naturally.
Yeah, and this might explain why the DOD keeps failing its audits, is because, you know, that's how they fund their block ops. That's how they, you know, do their off-the-book stuff is by doing exactly that. Let's charge, you know, 10 times how much it would cost, you know, a normal person to get something done. Or build something or make something or whatever, and that would probably explain the probably $2 trillion now after their sixth failed audit they can't account for.
By the way,
where
is Valerie there?
Is Valerie there? Montana Joe?
Is Valerie there?
Ah, yes, I'm here. I just had to unmute myself. Goodness, darn mute button.
Oh, okay,
yes,
Valerie.
Here.
I've got some bad news for you.
Bring it.
Happy birthday. I know you girls don't like to get older, but that's just the way it is.
Oh, you know, I would feel better about it if it was like a nice 40. But no, I am 38, and 38, in my opinion, is such an ugly number. I just don't like it. So let's just skip 38 because it's, yes, you're still technically in your 30s, but you're basically 40. So you're just like in this limbo spot. It's completely obviously psychological and it's a petty female thing, but I am being a petty female and saying 38 is an ugly number. I don't like it.
Yeah, you think you're
you
petty now. Wait till you reach 45.
You technically turn 40.
Wait till you're sweating.
2 years of dread before you hit 30.
Wait till you turn
45.
If you think you're petty now, you're going to look back at 38 and say, those may have been those petty number years, but I remember when I was younger.
45. You a young fart. My God, grasshopper. I'm 59. I'll trade to 38 any day of the week.
Well, how's that song go? It's my birthday. I'll cry if I want to. So.
Oh yeah, Leslie Bourne.
Cry about being 38 today.
Oh my God.
What was her name?
Now you're making me want to upload that song and play it.
Well, you gotta find something to laugh about.
We're still doing the show in 2 years. I'll have to remember and play that, you know, when you turn 40.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be throwing a party when I'm 40. Like 39, I'll be like, darn it, can I just get to 40 already and put the 30 behind me? Because you're basically at the tail end of 30, so it doesn't really count anymore. I mean, that is completely irrational and does not make sense. So I am 100% aware of that, but I am being a difficult, argumentative female at the moment and arguing not because I'm right, but just because I can. So that is my moment.
Of course. That's the female mantra. I do it because I can. Doesn't have to make sense. I just do it.
Well, for the most part, that's not me. I can't stand that stuff. But every once in a while, I get in a mood, and I'm like, you know what? I knew I was wrong 10 minutes ago, but now I'm just arguing for the sake of argument. So, and like I said, most of the time, that's not me. I prefer logical, rational, so on and so forth. But every once in a while, like right now, rationale can go take a hike. So can logic.
Well, I know one thing. I don't know if I'm exposing this, but I think that Lorianne may, and she didn't express this in very explicit terms, but I think she may have a surprise for you one of these days. Not necessarily today or tomorrow, but one of these days. Am I exposing too much, Lorianne? Are you glad
maybe,
you connected me in?
Maybe.
Now?
Yeah, I got, you know, I got like little, you know, I got like little little devils in my brain that that I might post something to you, Valerie, but that I kind of mentioned in passing to Montana Joe.
Let's just say
I don't
want to
put you on the spot on air.
Yeah, no, but she was full of compliments. It's just that she was full of compliments, and I can extrapolate from
it.
Yeah, from the compliments that, you know, she considers you a prized person. I don't know why, because I haven't interacted with you that much, but.
Oh, my gosh, I love it.
It's a mystery.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. With the underhanded slide dig thrown in there. Oh my
yeah,
gosh,
no,
I love
of course.
It. I'm going to go ahead
well, you
and
don't know me.
Bring Boyd and Joe Gibson into the party here, too. I'm bringing you both in, guys.
Into the party.
Hey, Val. Hey, Val.
Yes, sir.
Are you blonde?
Yes, I am blonde. I am a dirty dishwater blonde, which used to drive me crazy.
Blonde.
Yes,
oh,
because geez. my parents called me, you know, you're dirty dishwater blonde. Well, I got to wash dishes when I was younger, and that was disgusting. So I used to hate being called dirty dishwater blonde because, well, gross. But, yes, I am Yeah, it's like a really dark blonde, unless it's in the sunlight. Sometimes it's lighter, and then there's hints of red thrown in as well. Not that
okay,
you needed
that
to know all of that, but now you do.
But still cleaner than that river that's feeding into
that's,
the Santium River that we were talking about earlier.
that explains it to me. Thank you.
Oh, boy, you talk about dig. Jeez, boy,
what?
You sure will... Woo, look at,
exactly.
Listen to that.
How does that clarify things?
Yeah. I don't even know.
Bring
it. Hit him, Valerie. Hit him, Valerie.
Hey.
Well,
you know,
at least I'm all natural.
It's like this, okay? 38 is great. Don't let anybody kid you. You may not like the sound of 38, but 38 is great. Do you know 38 is also a wonderful caliber of a handgun? You know?
Ooh. Okay, you just changed
there
my
are
opinion.
There are a lot of great 38 stuff out there. You know.
Yep, I now love 38. Thank you very much. I am good with being 38 now. See?
In other words, our code. Yeah.
I got to agree with that.
Yeah, I know.
I love my late 30s. I really did. I think
me too.
Between, between 30, about 35 and 40, that last 5 years of my 30s, I think were my best. I mean, I absolutely loved my late 30s. So enjoy it while you can.
Yeah.
Because you'll be
well,
amazed.
For me, it was the earlier
30s. And all
30s.
Of a sudden, there's
yeah.
going to be shit going wrong with you that you're going to go, what?
Mm.
Where'd this come from? It's like, oh,
yeah. Give me back my 38.
ladies and gentlemen, first off, man, I put a link in the chat room that you might want to find out if you can play. And second off, my birthday is on Saturday. This coming up Saturday.
Oh, so, happy early birthday.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So
I will be
38.
No, he's wishing he was 38.
Well,
how old,
like we'll
how
have...
old are you going to be, Mike? 52 or 51?
51.
I wish I could be 51 again.
51's a good number. It's a prime number.
No, you're one of these mathematicians or astrologers. Which one?
Oh,
a numerologist.
Numerologist. That's a numerologist.
Oh, okay.
Not,
right.
Not astrology. No, I'm good there. I enjoy math, but I'm by no means a mathy person. I enjoy it, and I happen to be covering prime numbers with my kiddos. So since I homeschool, we've been covering prime, and it's like, ooh, it's a prime number. It's a good number.
There was a movie with a kid genius in like the third or fourth grade, and the teacher used to go to him for mathematical confirmation. So she was teaching the class one time about prime numbers, and she was, giving the delineations. So then she said, let's say the guy's name is Bob. So she goes to the kid, Bob, isn't this a prime number? Do you have any other prime numbers? He just goes, yeah, all of them. And she goes, what? Because they're supposed to be sectioned off, but nah, the kid, like I said, the kid was a genius. So he knew how to use prime and, in a more practical way. So 38's a good year. It's a prime number. And, like I said, when you get to be 45, you're going to be looking back at 38 and saying, holy cow, give me back my 38 again. But I'll tell you one thing. Like Lorianne said, she enjoyed her late 30s. I enjoyed the late 30s, too. But the early, when I hit 31, that was a good turning point for me, from 30 to 40. And I enjoy 40. I enjoy the age I'm at now. And let me tell you, all you guys on the phone complaining about your ages, I leave you all behind in the dust.
Okay,
hey, I love how old I am, because I'm amazed that I made it.
All you old bogeys, let's all get together and do one of those three-legged bag races.
Yeah, right?
Well, just for the record, I'm not complaining about like being at this stage in life. I just think 38 is an ugly number. So,
yeah, I heard you. Yeah, I know.
It's, but, it's interesting how, we get further on in life and then we look back and we're like, that wasn't as big of a deal as I thought it was at that point in time. And then it helps you keep that perspective as you go forward in life and just remember, at one point
I
felt this way.
Yeah, if you were related to Gunslinger, you would have been looking forward to 38.
Yeah, no kids.
Well, here we go. Boy was right. Lorianne had a list of things that now we've spent, 25 minutes on Valerie's birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not done. And we're not done yet.
That is time well spent, guys. That's time well spent.
And we're not done yet.
There's an awful lot of other stuff that we end up talking about.
That's right. Dude, this is an unscripted show.
Well, I am good with moving on at any point in time.
She does. Lori does an excellent job in letting us know what topics are not going to be covered tonight, because we're going to take this free-for-all down another trail. Just because. You know?
Well, I do have another topic I wanted to get to tonight that I didn't put in my show description eventually. But, you know, it's my co-host's birthday, so, you know, everything can be thrown
up in the air. Yeah, she deserves a celebration.
And by the way, Valerie, I will say one thing. When I was in my late 30s, on a personal note, that was the age. My late 30s were when I had the best sex of my entire life.
Oh my
you know,
gosh.
Seriously, like,
what was that?
Okay.
Yeah.
You had a list to get back to of things that we have not yet covered. Where were we?
Wait a minute. I'm interested. I'm game now. Let's stay on this track.
Let's go down this trail. Don't forget, you were the hot IT chick for a while, so you can parlay into that too.
Those will be stories for when we're at no man's land overtime. Once
For me, 25 was my mark. After that, every day I woke up, I'm going, how in the hell did I live to be this old? Because I wasn't going past 25.
Are you one of those people kept alive only by your grandmother's prayers?
I don't know. It's either I've still got something to do or God hates me. Because I didn't think none of the guys that I worked with, none of us, we never thought we were going to make it past 25 with the crap that we were getting away with, you know.
Well, I'd say he doesn't hate you. He loves you, and he's got a reason for keeping you around.
Well,
see? Different perspective.
It's got to be something, or he's just tormenting me just because he can.
No, I think he's got something planned for you that you just haven't quite found yet. But there's a reason you're still here, and I'm glad you're here and glad you're with us. And it's I'm glad you made it past 25.
Yep, Lori, and I would suggest, this is just a suggestion, I'd suggest you play that clip I put into the chat room. It's a fun thing that I thought is very apropos for Valerie today.
Oh, come on.
Oh, I thought we were off the topic of me.
No. I know what the clip is. It's all about having sex at the age of 38.
Oh, my
goodness.
Let's play.
That 38 special?
That's right.
I actually have my grandfather's old 38 special.
Sorry, guys.
You know what you did, Lorianne, don't
you? There
you go. You put a subliminal imprint into Valerie's head. So the next time she's having sex, she's going to think of you. And that's not, you know.
Oh, good grief.
Well, Lorianne said.
Yeah, Lorianne said, I'm supposed to have an orgasm, buddy. Come on.
Okay. Lori, I still have the power of the mute button, right?
See, that's the thing, is when you're in your late 30s, you take control of your own orgasm. It's like, you know, the guy.
I didn't know Valerie was a Mormon. Jesus.
You're no longer really all that dependent on the guy anymore for that. You know?
Yeah, you just rape them.
Okay.
Okay.
So the IRS is sending out 30 million tax
forms to people paying 600 or more.
Oh, look at
that. And Venmo.
And you know, today's the IRS's
Venmo
birthday.
Valerie, with this bunch, you're not going to be able to change the subject that easily.
Well,
that's
you,
right,
you
Laura,
give me the power of
Valerie.
The mute button, so, you know.
Well, is that right? Oh, now we're being
dirty.
Threatened? Oh,
it's my
okay.
birthday.
The power of the
it's,
mute
my
button,
birthday.
So.
It's my birthday.
See, you know, I offered you, Valerie, that you could take the night off. Now, aren't you wishing that you would have taken me up on that?
I'm sure she is.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, yeah, she'll get off the show and her family will say to her,
Valerie,
what's going on with you? And she'll say, those damn people wish me birthday for a half an hour.
I think we're pushing like 45 minutes now.
Nah, it's not that long.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. Valerie's kids are probably listening and are wondering what the hell's going on that they're laughing so much.
Yeah,
you know,
normally we're not laughing. Oh no, they're not here at the moment. So I've got my older girls here, but the rest aren't at the moment. So it's probably a good thing because I've turned about 67 different shades of red. And
oh, they've been listening to the show.
You in the red light district now?
Oh, we passed that long time ago.
Yeah, in the red zone, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, so real quick, I'm going to play what Mike was suggesting that I play here real quick. Here we go.
There we go. That's it. That's loud, Laura, man.
My goodness. Well, one of the things that I wanted to touch up on tonight, there is another topic that I want to get to that involves a clip. But before that, I thought this would be a good thing to discuss because I'm not really even sure how I feel about this one. More than 2 billion criminal records could be sealed under a bill signed into law by New York Governor Kathy Hochul, which is expected to add to Republican claims that the state's Democrats are too soft on crime. The Clean Slate Law, which goes into effect in 1 year, felons who have completed their sentences, parole, or probation to get their criminal record sealed 3 years after they are sentenced for misdemeanors and 7 years for felonies, so long as they haven't been convicted of any other offenses. Sex crimes and major felonies, such as murder, will not be eligible for sealing, according to the Hochul administration. Hochul signed the bill on Thursday and framed the issue largely in economic terms, saying it will help New Yorkers access jobs while allowing police, prosecutors, and school officials to protect their communities. Quote, the best crime-fighting tool is a good-paying job, the governor said in a statement. And as our state faces a worker shortage with more than 450,000 job openings right now, this new law will help businesses find more workers who will help them grow, expand, and thrive. Law enforcement agencies, prosecutors, and defense attorneys can still access sealed convictions under certain conditions. So will private employers in industries where workers interact with children, the elderly, and disabled individuals. The FBI will still be able to access those records. When someone is arrested by state or local police, their fingerprints and information are sent to the FBI for review. The agency creates a federal record of the charges. More than 2 million New Yorkers have criminal convictions for convictions between 1980 and 2021, according to a study by John Jay College Data Collaborative for Justice. New York is known for being particularly unforgiving when allowing people to get out from under the shadow of a conviction. Criminal records can haunt people long past their punishment, criminal justice advocates say, preventing them from getting jobs, housing, or college. The legislation authorizing the mass killings was approved by lawmakers over the summer on a largely party line vote, with Republicans voting against it. So this one, like I said, this one's open for debate. I'm not really, you know, I actually, as much as I hate to say this, and as much as I cannot stand Kathy Hochul, I actually, the libertarian me, I gotta say I'm for this. You know, it makes certain allowances. You know, and it seems like it covers kind of the major areas of concern, you know, where you don't want violent people, you know, working in industries that involve children or elderly or disabled, that sort of thing. But essentially we'll seal it for other purposes, so that I think if anybody, you know, has ever, you know, had a crime on their record, you know, it can prevent you. It's kind of like a life sentence, you know, if you don't seal those records in a way, and probably get your life back after that. You've done your time, you've paid your fines, you're done with probation, all that. You want to start your life, you know, back again, but yet this conviction on your record can be a hindrance no matter how hard you try or no matter how hard you want to turn yourself around. So I have a hard time being against this, but what do you guys think? I don't know. We're open for debate on this one.
I wouldn't hire anybody from fucking New York. Period. If I can't check their records, guess what? They're not hired. I don't care whether they got a record or not. But if I can't have the opportunity to check the records, I ain't hiring them, period. End of story. I don't care what Kathy Hochul has to say.
Yeah, we got a cranky Santa here.
Well, you know, I got to agree with Cranky Santa. Yeah, because, you know, if I was a business and you know, and the person that I'm hiring, which I was in business for myself for 10.5 years, I'd want to see what's in their backyard when they're representing my company and me, okay? Like with me, I was an electrical contractor. I was an electrical contractor. So when I send somebody out to do a service call at a house or whatever, business house, whatever, okay, that person is representing me. Okay, just like a sheriff. You elect a sheriff, and he hires his deputies, which his deputies represent the sheriff, which you duly elected. Same thing. You know, I wonder what
you're talking about. Yeah, and you know, the other thing is that it puts the employer on the fucking hook.
Yep.
You know, if that guy goes and does something, you know.
Yep.
And yep. And you have no other, you know, recourse. I mean, you as an employer could be sued by whoever he did something to, you know.
Your customer.
And that's just the way it is. And I'm not gonna take that chance.
Hell no. Your customer could turn around and sue you. What if he started stealing stuff out of their houses, or, you know, or looking and then came back later and did a home invasion or robbery or whatever? Well, when it traces back to him, then it traces back to you because you hired the guy because you can't see his background. Well, they got your ass on the hook too. No, thank you.
Yep.
Not me.
Hey, real
no
quick,
way.
Guys. Montana Joe dropped, and he wants me to dial him back in. So I am going to do that real quick. So you're going to hear that, you know, dialing stuff here in a second.
Okay.
So bear with me, okay? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But, yeah, because I definitely want to get a feeler out for what you guys think about what they're doing in New York and this legislation for sure. But let me get him dialed back in because he might have something to say on the subject as well. Hopefully I am typing his number in. Okay, all right. So dialing him in. I'm not sure if there's a way to mute it when I call somebody. So.
Sorry for the inconvenience. Oh, man.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Yeah, I saw you dropped, and I'm like, did you drop intentionally, or did you want me to call back in? So, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. All of a
I'm not
sudden,
sure, did
I
you,
everything was
hear...
silent.
Jeez. Uh-oh. Did you hear what I was talking about that legislation in New York that
part
we're talking
it.
About now?
Yeah, part of it. I don't agree that they should make it easier for criminals under those circumstances to go get jobs. If they perform some sort of rehabilitation successfully, yeah. But there's a reason why we keep records of ex-cons. And just because they're going
well,
to...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's 3 years for the most part, and then 7 years for, like, felonies and things like that, the article said. So, you know, we support our gun rights, right? And, you know, so there's the argument of, hey, if a convicted felon shouldn't be sentenced to the rest of their life to have their Second Amendment rights taken away from them. Well, what about the right to work? What about the right to earn a living? You know, how long after being convicted of a crime and doing your time, you've paid your fine, you're not on probation anymore, you've done all that, how long should that black mark on your record follow you and impede on your ability to gain, you know, meaningful employment, you know, and that sort of thing, you know, so.
Well, they need meaningful employment. That's absolutely true. But at the same time, if they don't perform any type of rehabilitation, when they get out of prison, especially if you've even been in prison for a year or two, you're still going to be acclimated to the prison life, and you're going to find coming outside to be especially arduous. If they're as far as I'm concerned, their mindset that got them into prison is still going to be with them when they get out of prison. In order to give them meaningful employment, so that they they'll lower the recidivism rate, make sure that they hopefully enjoy. But us as citizens, we enjoy their participation in rehabilitation programs and successfully complete them. That's my opinion.
Well, you know, when you have a person that goes through this kind of stuff, you got to remember that there's always that little nasty little term called repeat offenders. Okay. Yeah, they may have turned over a new leaf and all this stuff while they was in prison or whatever they was in prison for, which is great, okay? But when they get out here in the real world, you know, outside of that prison system, and all of a sudden you have to pay for all this stuff. You got to pay for your food. You got to pay for a roof over your head, the whole nine yards. And now they start remembering back in the day when, knocked over that 7-Eleven down the street there, and man, my rent 3 months due and I'm starving to death and blah, blah, blah. Wow, here's a gun. Human nature is very tempting. It's very tempting. Thank God I've never been in a position like that. But I see
it. Well, you know, we're not talking
on,
about people that are fresh out of prison here. I mean, again, this law will allow ex-cons who've completed their sentences, parole, or probation to get their criminal records sealed 3 years after they are sentenced for misdemeanors and 7 years after for felonies, so long as they have not been convicted of other crimes. Sex crimes and major felonies like murder will not be eligible for sealing. So, so this person got out of prison, you know, it's 3 years later, you know, say it was for a misdemeanor. 3 years later, they've kept themselves clean. They haven't committed any other crimes, all that kind of stuff, you know, or 7 years for felonies, which not all felonies are violent, you know, by the way, either. And so 7 years for that. So, I mean, isn't that long enough to kind of go, okay, time to seal their record. This doesn't have to be a ball and chain on them anymore. You know, they've done all their stuff. They've been clean. They haven't gotten arrested. They're not, you know, they haven't repeated their offenses, blah, blah, blah. You know, so mm-hmm. I think it kind of covers a lot of those worries, you know. And, you know, I don't think that a misdemeanor or especially like a non-violent felony, you know, or that kind of thing should be a ball and chain for somebody for the rest of their life.
Personally, I don't agree with this whole thing for a couple of reasons. One, it was likened to the Second Amendment gun rights. But the difference I see with this one is when people do not have a right to work for somebody else. They have a right to, I mean, they, you know, pursuit of happiness, you know, you can go get a job or you can do your own thing. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but you don't have a right to be employed by another person. And there are consequences to our actions. Now, a person that wants to hire another individual, they have, you know, being able to decide, okay, you know, they see a 20-year-old charge, that's on them as to whether or not they want to give this person a job based on that charge. Again, that comes down to consequences. Sometimes they stink. Sometimes they're not what we would call fair. But that's why it's important to teach that personal accountability and responsibility and think about, hey, how can this impact me in the future? If we're teaching our kids that those things now, one, it's less of an issue later, but big reason why so many people have charges on them that are creating issues with employment in situations like this is because of the corrupt system that is prosecuting them. They want to sit there and tie the hands of an employer, say, oh, you don't really get to know who you're hiring. You have to take them at their word. We get to know, you don't, but yet we can sit there and convict anybody that we want to. We can charge them with whatever we want to, even if it's a trumped-up charge, even if we offer them a plea deal, which they take not because they were truly guilty, but because it's they'd rather take that than take a risk in going to trial. The state just put their failings on the employers and say, well, yeah, we've screwed up, but you get to deal with it now. That's the biggest mm-hmm. issue that I have with it, is that it's a way of covering their backsides. If they really have an issue with these records impacting people for the rest of their lives and their employment, then perhaps they should look internally and see what they're doing that's not okay, because I guarantee you there's a huge number of people that have charges that should and convictions that shouldn't. I mean, I know people that have convictions that shouldn't, but they took a plea deal or they weren't allowed to introduce evidence because whatever reason, the system's corrupt. It's not the employer's fault. That's the state's fault.
I'd like to add to that, too. The thing is that, Laurie Ann, you're talking about 3 years and 7 years, respectively, for the misdemeanors and the felonies. During that time, yeah, they haven't committed any crimes. And ostensibly, they're out of the temptation mode, okay? But during that time, if the government was really going to be interested in their welfare and the citizens' welfare, they can institute rehabilitation programs. If they do that, and the person goes through a rehabilitation program and shows that they are truly rehabilitated, you know, as much as possible, that could actually be a good mark for them. Because the employer, I agree with the family, you have the right to pursue happiness. You do not have a right to demand that you be that you work for another company. You're going to the employer, potential employer, with your hat in hand practically, and it's up to him to make the decision. Now, if it comes down between me and a felon, and the felon has gone through rehabilitation, then who knows? That felon may actually have a better mark for him as opposed to compared to me, because he's shown that he's done the work to rehabilitate himself. So that could be a good mark, a good thing.
Well, and also with that rehabilitation,
maybe that's the component that's needed, is exactly what you're saying. Sorry, go ahead, Valerie.
Well, I was just going to say, with that rehabilitation piece, there could be some sort of training that's involved in that, where that person with the felony record could actually be more qualified than yourself.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's ways, yeah, there's definitely ways to go about it. And one of the other things that it leaves out is it just, you have to stay out of trouble for those, let's say with the 3 years. There's misdemeanor theft charges. A person could have 10 years of a record where they have repeatedly stolen, and they've never, it's never gone up to a felony. It's always, they've kept it at a misdemeanor. Well, they stay out of trouble for 3 years. That doesn't necessarily mean they've stopped stealing for 3 years. It just means that they haven't been caught. So then when you go to hire that person, you don't see anything about their past behavior. You're going in blind. You're reliant solely upon that person's word. And, well, if they've gone 3 years without being caught, they're probably going to do a good job at fooling you too. I mean, just little things like that that are – there's a lot of issues with this.
Right. I'd like to jump back in when Gunslinger finishes.
Right. Well,
go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is this. I'll go back to what happened at the end of the Shawshank Redemption when one of the guys gets out of jail and all he could get was a job bagging groceries. All right? You know? And he'd served 40 years or whatever it was that he served. And the thing is what kind of jobs are these guys going to get? I mean, yeah, some of these prisons, jails, whatever, have great education programs. My dad used to go into our jail and teach these guys, you know, because he's been a teacher and all that stuff. He's been a teacher, but he used to go in there and educate these guys, right? And so when they get out, they can go out and maybe get a job or whatever. But again, if they're doing that and they prove they can keep their noses out of trouble, you know, serve your time. You keep your noses out of trouble. You get your parole. You don't try to own a firearm. You don't do all this stuff. Even though I think that's if you're proven you're rehabilitated, you should be able to own a firearm. That's a different problem. But again, if you're learning how to do things, I mean, they're definitely learning skills in these prisons, right? How to do electrical skills and this, that, and the other, which is a lot of, you know, things that you can do. But again, if they're learning those skills and they're not able to get out and get those type of jobs, you know, that they're going to pay high because they've come out from being a felony, you know, or misdemeanor, whatever the hell it is, they're stuck. They're stuck with maybe bagging groceries or something like that, right? That type of thing.
Well, it's like this. I wouldn't hire anybody if I couldn't see what their work, what their background was, period. The reason being is, if I have a big electrical company where I did both commercial and residential work, okay, if I knew the guy's background, I might, you know, and his nose has been clean for a while, I might hire him and put him on commercial construction work and not put him on house calls or, you know, repair work just because of the fact that, he'll be going into somebody else's place of business or their house or something like that. Because unless they pass a hold harmless bill where the employer is held harmless if his employee commits a crime while on duty in somebody else's establishment or something of that effect, where the victim cannot come back and sue me because I had hired him.
So nobody's
held
accountable.
I like that idea, actually. I like that idea. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
I was just saying, so therefore, when you go to court and you get sentenced by the judge, that sentence doesn't matter then. You got a life sentence. So that stigma, everything's held against you. The judge says 5 years, you do 5 years, you're out, that's it, period. You got 5 years plus 3 years probation, that's it. After that 3 years probation, that's it, you're clean. That's it. Nothing held about you get to get looked into and judged for what you did back 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. How can any society ever overcome the crime problem or the stigma of crime or advance as a people? There'll be no way. There's no way. And that just gives us a green light to suppress people, to discriminate, and no good. No good. It doesn't work.
Now, hey, listen. Listen,
like that liability
there is,
thing,
there
because,
is nothing,
you know, if the employer
there's nothing,
isn't able to know, you know, that what Boyd's saying, and that person commits a crime while on the job, then let the state be responsible for that because the employer had no ability, since the record was sealed, to know that that person had prior offenses that, you know, that the employer would have judged things differently, you know, so that, you know, that's a good point to make there too, where maybe there should be a liability thing where it's like, okay, well, you know, if the employer was able to know, then what Boyd was saying, hey, maybe I won't put them in a position where they're making house calls. Maybe I'll put them in a position where, you know, they are more work in house, for example, where they can be more closely supervised, you know, and, alleviate some of that liability. So that's a good point as well.
Well, the criminal...
But I get what you're saying, Joe, because I tend to agree with this because I don't think that, you know, a misdemeanor offense, you know, you got in a bar fight when you were 25 years old, you know, and yeah, okay, you know, you beat the crap out of somebody and you go to prison for a year or something and, you know, should that bar fight still... your ability to gain, you know, meaningful employment, you know, when you're 40 years old, you know, should that be a ball and chain? So, yeah, I think, you know, where's the compromise here?
The compromise is called common sense. For instance, the laws are messed up, like the first person said there. Everything's corrupt and twisted and gridlocked because I knew a kid that was 18 years old and he was dating a 16-year-old girl. And the parents pressed charges for rape. So now for the rest of his life, he has to register as a sex offender. He will not get a job anywhere. So you know what you just did? You opened up a door for him to say, hey, what can I do now? You know, he's going to become a criminal. You know, rob banks for a living. I don't know. That's what I told the guy. I said, you know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to get a job as a registered sex offender? Nowhere. You know, because everyone gets to pick apart your background and judge you for what happened, and when they don't really know the facts anyway about any case, because everybody's case is individually different. And, of course, we're always going to have crime in our society. We're just never going to stop. It's just a natural fact. But we can educate ourselves and become, you know, and just use common sense, you know, on everything, because everyone's an individual. And you're a good judge of character. Everyone is. If you're especially if you're a business owner, you should be a good judge of character. So, you know, but mistakes happen, and we can't be held liable for what every single person does out there. The individual has to be held liable and responsible for their individual actions. So we got to stop shifting the blame onto insurance companies, onto this person, onto that person. Just take responsibility for our own actions and for our own judgments and miscues. If I make a mistake, I make a mistake. I got to pay for it.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you, Joe, at the beginning of your particular philosophy there about people who get out of prison, and I'm going to disagree with the gunslinger. So let me start with you, Joe. Yeah, socially, we should take a look back, take a look at people and say, look, you made a mistake, and it seems as though you've learned your lesson. But we don't really know about anybody, regardless of whether they're going to prison or not, about whether or not they've learned their lessons. A lot of times the people that we think are good, upstanding people are not. Now, when it comes to the employee, to the employer, rather, he has a right to know who he's hiring. If a person hasn't gone to jail, has to produce evidence of his worthiness to get the job because of his background, he's got to prove it. I've had to prove myself at interviews because when I started out in a certain occupation with certain companies, I had to sell myself, okay? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when you get the person who does hire you, you show your worth. And now how I disagree with the gunslinger there is that now if there's a harmless law and you know that, because I think, Laurianne, you were addressing, and I don't think the gunslinger was addressing this. I think he was talking about if the employer knows that the employee is an ex-con, but a misdemeanor, right? Misdemeanor type of guy that he wants to be indemnified against the guy going into somebody's home, maybe drinking, getting into a fight, and the rest of the nonsense. That would then give the employee, or the employer rather, a license to send this guy anywhere. I like the fact that the employer should be careful, okay? Let him take the guy who's potentially dangerous and put him in a situation where there's no temptation. Do that. But then again, Joe, people have to prove their worth. If a person's out of jail, they made a mistake, yes, there are consequences. The government is doing all of this not to help the cons, okay, not to help the incarcerated. They're doing it to divide and conquer. My solution would be let the person go to some – if the government was really sincere about this, let them rehabilitate the people who get out of prison. Let them train them in a trade in prison, train them in some sort of commercial work before they get out, and give them rehabilitation programs in and out. I, as a potential employer, I don't want somebody who's been in prison for any length of time, even though they've been out for 5 to 7 years. To me, it's a dangerous situation. So I'm disagreeing with you on that.
I think that's a stigma. I don't know. It's a tough – I mean, like I said, I think you have to judge a person based on the content of the character and qualifications to do the job at the time and the training that they – not what they did 10, 15 years ago or even 5 years ago. You know, I mean – I mean, I don't know. I ran a business here in North Carolina for 18 years, landscaping. I had 10 employees usually at a time. And as a matter of fact, you know what? Most of the guys that I hired were out of jail, and I preferred to hire guys that were out of jail because they worked harder. You know, that's how I saw it anyway, and that's what I witnessed. So, and from my personal experience, and landscaping is a back-breaking, hard job, especially in 100-degree heat, and tempers can flare, and trust me, I've been in the trucks, you know, two, three guys in a pickup truck, pulling a trailer with equipment and working out in that hot sun, trimming shrubs or digging trenches or what have you. You know, it's rough work. But I preferred to hire guy, people who call me all the time, you know, well, I got a felony conviction, you know. I said, I don't care, you know, and I didn't. You know, because I didn't care what they did in the past. I only care about, can you do the job now? Will you show up on time? Will you be an honest worker? Will you be a hard worker? Are you qualified? And when they work, you know, I put them on a probationary period for 30 days, and, you know, where I scrutinize them and watch them, and if they pass, then fine. And I put them on full time. If they don't, then, you know, I get rid of them. That's it. You know, it's just common sense. I don't care what the court said, because like someone said, the system's corrupt anyway. How can we trust it? How are we going to judge people based upon a corrupt system? You know, we got to fix the corrupt system first. Then maybe we can start judging that, you know?
But here's another thing, too. You're a different type of person. The thing is, I'll make this short, Valerie.
Go ahead. No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Joe, you're a different type of person. You know what it's like on the inside and outside. If a guy, even if a guy passes probation because he's a phony, and you realize later that he's actually just trying to game you, you're going to say to this guy, hey, Bobby, why don't you and I have a little private conversation, okay? And then after that, he's not going to mess around anymore, all right? So
yeah.
You know that's going to happen. I'm done,
yeah.
Valerie.
Well, here's
now,
here's
I was
a different
just going
thing.
To say that one of the things is that, you know, like with what you're describing, right now employers already have that ability to disregard a person's record or to take it into consideration and say, you know what, that happened so many years ago, I'm not worried about it right now. They're able to do that, but there is a reason that some choose not to. Some don't. Their motivations are arbitrary. Others have legitimate reasons, but I think taking away an employer's ability to make a fully informed decision about the person that they are employing is—I can't quite get behind that.
Well, you're right. Because, hang on real quick, here in North Carolina, it's happened to me. I was working for a security company as a security officer, and the state of North Carolina stepped in and told my employer that I cannot work for that employer because I went through family court and I violated a protective order by sending a text message, and I got arrested for contempt of court. So that disqualifies me from being a security officer under their guidelines because I lack moral character and moral turpitude. That's what they said. My employer had to let me go. I'm fighting it now, but it's an uphill battle, and you know I've already lost in the lower courts because it's just a waste of time. So I have to wait till I get to the higher courts because the statute says they're not supposed to be able to do that. But then the state still does it. So the state's violating its own laws, like you said, like you originally said, the system is corrupt. So I mean, it's ridiculous.
But again, that comes down to an issue with the corruption within the state, not a fault of individual employers. And now we're taking away a tool that individual employers have available to them. Meanwhile, the state has it available, but employers don't. And then that just goes back to the entire issue of, well, how many people has the state gone after unjustly and so on and so forth. I'm going to drop it there. Because I'm just repeating myself at this point.
Here's kind of the same situation there between what the business that I ran and what Joe's business ran. He was landscaping. That's outside. 99% of it, I'm sure, occurred outside. Okay. My business, I had to go into people's houses and businesses. Okay. You know, pretty fancy houses. You know, people, my customer driving BMWs and a couple of them were Porsches and, you know, expensive houses, okay? So, you know, I had to go inside, you know, and
Sergeant, by the way, you guys.
But anyway, if I had to...
He must have heard y'all calling him out.
I mean, they work outside digging ditches and you're running lines outside all day long. Okay, fine, whatever. But when you go into somebody's houses or business, you want somebody that, you know, you got to know them. That they're not going to steal or do anything, you know, stuff like that. You know, or you wouldn't be in business very long. You know, go ahead.
you know, there are going to be losses on both sides of the equation, and it's all because of the state and or the federal government, of which we know is corrupt, and their aim is to divide and conquer and make life horrible for everybody. There are reasonable answers to these particular problems, but do you think the state and the federal government is going to invest in that? No. Of course not.
No, they should stay out of it.
Well, yeah, it would be a lot better. And I understand Joe's point of view, and I understand Gunslinger's point of view. It's just that
here's another thing. Okay, you got a business, and you got your employees, and you've just hired somebody on that you cannot verify their background. Okay, now as a businessman, you go and you try to get a contract with a government agency, you know, to do whatever. Well, you're coming in and you're placing a bid on it, and all of a sudden, or you have a contract. And all of a sudden, they pull your contract out from underneath you. Why? Well, because you've got this guy on your payroll that's a felony, that has a felony. And that's not, you know, you can't have anybody like that in your employ. Well, Jesus, how is a guy supposed to know that if he can't check the records? You know?
Well,
Hold that thought real quick. There is only about a minute left of the live broadcast. So if you're out there and you're listening and you haven't called in yet, please do so now, 563-999-3698. Call in now before we go into overtime. You've got about a minute to do so. And then if you want me to bring you in, go ahead and press 1. That'll raise your hand and I can bring you into the conversation. Or you can just kick back and listen. Either way is great, but just wanted to give everybody a heads up here that we are about to go into overtime, so you got to call in now before the live show ends. So, okay, anyways, sorry about that. Continue, please.
Because I know that, you know, if you try and get a contract with the military or something like that, they are going to dig into your company's history and background, and every swinging dick that you have working for you. And it doesn't matter. And if you hired somebody that is, you know, a detriment to you doing business because you didn't have a chance to check his records and stuff like that, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you can turn around and you can fire him, you know, but is that fair?
Is it fair to
the guy with the record?
Is it fair to the guy with the record that I have to fire him because he's got a record, because some company won't take me because I'm going to stick up for the employee. I'm going to stick up for the small guy. If you guys don't want me working for you because I got two convicted felons that are doing a good job and I like them and they're doing good work for me, then too bad. Go hire somebody else then. You know, that's how I would do it. I'll take the law. I'll sacrifice.
I'd like to weigh in on this as someone who did hire a convicted felon when I had an automobile repair shop. The guy came in to me, and I was impressed by the fact that he admitted he was a convicted felon. He was convicted for armed robbery and felony possession of controlled substances with intent to distribute. He robbed another drug dealer at the point of a gun, and he had several arrests and convictions for drug dealing and possession. And he admitted to me right off the bat and said, yeah, I got this record and all this. So I checked him out. I talked to the cops who arrested him, you know, because I knew him. I talked to him. I looked up his arrest record and report. I went and talked to the cops. They told me about him. They said, oddly enough, they thought he had a pretty decent character despite the fact that he was a convicted felon, and explained to me why. He said he was a stand-up guy, that he never did anything to anyone that wasn't directly involved in the trade that they were in. And he said it seemed like all the reports from his probation officers and whatnot that he was off probation now, but when he was on probation, he was not problematic at all with the parole officer. So I told him, okay, I said, look here, man. We work on expensive cars. You got, as we could see, we got a locksmith here. We got key-making equipment. We can program key fobs here. And, you know, it's very tempting for anybody who's able to steal a car. We got all the stuff here to enable you with the person's invoices, with their address, their phone number, where they live, the license plate of the car, everything else. You're going to know all that. So I got to know that I can trust you to be an honest, upright employee before I hire you for the job. We had a long, me and my partner had given a long interview. He impressed us, so we decided, okay, we're going to take a shot. He worked for us for 4 years, stand-up guy, one of the best mechanics we had. He left and got his own repair shop, and right now he's got one of the larger automobile repair shops and automobile dealerships on the southeast side of Chicago, and he's been straight ever since. Now, does that mean I think this New York law is a good idea? Not necessarily. The main problem with it that I see is it actually marginalizes law-abiding citizens whose clean records are now going to be meaningless, especially people from high crime rate communities like a lot of black people. An employer will no longer be encouraged by a clean record, and I suspect this is probably a step toward eliminating the utility of background checks and even banning them altogether someday. Meanwhile, righteous law-abiding American citizens will be impossible to distinguish from those who are lawless. Employees will decide the odds are better of hiring some foreigner than an American whose background sealed from view. And another problem with this is maybe time period is too short. I mean, I know it's kind of arbitrary to decide how long it is to tell me someone's on a straight and narrow or not. But, you know, that is arbitrary. We can argue about what that should be. I think it should be up to the individual employer. After all, employers don't hire people for any number of reasons. They were former communists. They were members of the Nazi Party. They were Democrats or Republicans. They were, people who were on terrorist watch lists. The FBI put them on a terrorist watch list. Any number of reasons people have. Now, I don't understand why having a felony record can't be one of the considerations that an employee should be allowed to consider. I think it should be up to an employer. And like in my case, I weighed the individual that was sitting in front of me. I listened to him. I checked out his story. I checked with people who knew him. I decided to take a chance, and it paid off for me. I don't regret it one bit. I'm glad I did it. I don't want an arbitrary law from some Democrat who's got a political axe to grind to tell me what my options are as an employer, especially as Gunslinger points out, they don't have a hold harmless law, and you knowingly, perhaps, maybe the records are sealed, but you know this guy's a felon from other information sources, and you hire him in view of the fact there's a law, and you say, well, maybe I get sued over it, and then they do something wrong with somebody as a result of their ability by you employing them, and next thing you know, you're the victim of a great big lawsuit, you lose the whole damn company. Now, I don't like this law one bit. I do not like the government legislating in this area. I do not think a person should be forbidden from hiring a felon for most things. I do not think that. But I think an employer should be allowed to make the consideration on their own and exercise their own judgment, as in most things. Keep the government out of stuff like this.
That's right.
I'm going to bring in Tave Rose's hand before we went into overtime, so I'm going to bring him on in. Sorry to interrupt again, but just wanted to let everybody know, Tave, I'm bringing you on in.
I'm just listening. You guys go ahead.
There is nothing in that law that prevents an employer from hiring somebody, okay? That's not the problem. The problem is it prevents the employer from fully vetting a possible employee. I mean, if you got two guys, okay, you got one job and you got two guys, both are equally qualified for that job, and you want to vet, see which one will be a better fit. Well, you can't go and see the guy, the one of the guys who has a felony record. Okay? Well, I mean, if, you know, it doesn't prevent you from hiring him, but it prevents you from checking to see if he has a felony record, so that maybe you won't hire him and choose the other guy.
Well, how about this?
You know?
How about this? They could check if he's still got an active sentence or like probation or something like that, then yes, he should be allowed to check. But after you finish your sentence, that's it. You're done. All the, you know, there's no reason why this should be on. You should be banned or barred or discriminated against or have any check marks against you for the rest of your life, because you were not sentenced to a life sentence. You were sentenced to 5 years, just say as an example. 5 years, that's it. You're done. That's it. You're out. You know. That's why you go to court. That's why you get sentenced.
But isn't one of the incentives for staying on the straight and narrow the possibility that you might miss out on employment opportunities that you wouldn't if you hadn't been a criminal in the first place? I think this diminishes that asset. I think we are saying to people, it really doesn't matter if you stay on the straight and narrow or not. Well, old government will prevent your records from being inspected by an prospective employer. I don't think that's good either. I think having the fact that you could be banished for a long, perhaps forever, for certain employment opportunities is not necessarily a bad thing for society. I want the employer to have the option to be able to vet his employee as fully as possible.
But I don't want people getting banned either. You know, I mean, it's just not right. I mean,
not everybody's going to ban everybody. Some people will. A lot of people are going to be like me, because I believe in looking at people as individuals. I knew this guy was a felon. I know about felons. I was dealing with felons most of my adult life. I'm saying, I looked at this man as an individual, and I said, hey, I'm going to give him a shot, because he seems worthy. He seems sincere.
I'm
going to hire him.
Why is it your business? Why is it your business what I did 25 years ago? It's none of your business.
Because
it
might depend upon what you do today. It might. And I can't. It's not like it's something I can disregard.
Why?
Because it
might. Trust your judges.
And I have to know that you're not going to let do it again. I have to know it.
Well,
I have to be assured of it in my judgment. I get that. See, that's just it. When you have this liberty. Liberty means being able to exercise discretion, too. When I'm an employer, especially when it says I had an automobile repair shop with ready access to the means to steal cars, I had to be assured that my employee wasn't going to do it.
No, listen, but the judge sentenced me for my crime I did. He gave me my sentence.
And I know criminals. Remember, I was a police officer. Most crime is committed by recidivists, those who do it again and again and again and again and again.
Sarge, here's another thing, too. Here's another thing. You say people are like you. People are not like you, and people are not like Joe. I was surprised to find out when you said that, okay, if the guy was there, you interviewed him, and you were going to investigate even further. Do you know how many people have said, would have said, so you are admitting to me that you are a felon, and a career felon if you were given the shot, and it was a dangerous crime. They would have dismissed him right then and there and spent the next 20 minutes just pulling the guy's leg so that the interview could be over and he could be dismissed. You did it because for some reason he impacted you. You're not like other people. Joe's not like other people when it comes to employers either. He can handle somebody who disobeys the rules. So can you. Most people, they're not going to get involved. They're just going to say, let me hire the safest of the best and move on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let me say something. Yeah, about well, yeah, I would, I mean, if it was somebody like Joe, I would take a chance on somebody like Joe. I mean, you can tell a stand-up guy. And that's what I said. You're looking at individuals. We need to start regarding each other as individuals. I mean, we're not groups. We don't behave as groups. Groups of criminals are not going to always be good.
Yeah.
No, they're always going to be bad. You look at them as individuals. But I cannot ignore, knowing what I know as a police officer, that the majority of crime, particularly violent crime, is committed by recidivists who do it over and over again despite innumerable convictions.
And why? If I know, and they get in that carousel of the system of the Department of Correction, Department of Corruption, maybe, or Department of Warehousing, but, you know, Department of Corrections.
Oh, no. I know it because I've arrested a lot of them. And I know it because I've arrested them multiple times for the same thing.
Let me interrupt for a second so I can get Tave in. So I know Laurie would want Tave in and
yeah, Tave was supposed to go a while ago, actually. Sorry, Tave.
Yeah, and I thought you wanted to jump in, Tave. If not, then I'm going to jump in.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Okay. Yeah, it looks okay. I know you guys are talking about actual criminals that have been – okay, let me bring it to you in a different outlook, under almost discrimination, because it would all fall under the Discriminatory Act somehow or another. Let's say you go to apply for a job like I did, and I'm covered from my wrist up to my neck and tattoos on both arms. Both of them are sleeved out. I go to apply for a job at Bridgestone Firestone, which I can actually say, after all this, I worked there for almost 18 years without incident. But I have a brother, and a lot of people think we're twins. And through my process of interview, I wore a long sleeve shirt and a tie, and I was there probably four different times. At the end of my interview, the brother of our middle school principal asked me, can I ask you a question, Tave? And I said, sure. He goes, did you box and do you have tattoos? And I looked at him. I said, would it matter if I did, if I got this job? And he goes, no, you've got the job, but is it you or your brother that has them? And I said, it is me. He goes, you're kidding me. We thought your brother would have been the better hire if we were going to compare it between him and his brother now. You know, his brother being the principal, because my brother was trouble in middle school. Here I am. I take on showing my take off my sleeve or my shirt. And he goes, oh, my God. I go, does that affect anything? He says, well, appearance-wise, no. I go, well, it shouldn't, because I'm here to do the job. And if I pass everything else, my background check and everything, I go, why would you not hire somebody because they have a tattoo? I don't care if it's – unless it's so distasteful that it's awful. But none of mine are like that. No skulls and death or nothing. Just colorful. And I couldn't believe that. To this day, now it was almost 20 years ago, and I had to actually leave that business, that trade. I was working for a Bridgestone Test of Indy race car tires. I had to leave to take care of my mom and dad. Both of them got sick, and I lost both of them. But I had to walk away from that place. They actually took me in without knowing that I had tattoos. After I was hired, it was brought up. And through human resources, they changed their whole policy that they needed to see that. And I don't know what – it's upsetting because that's what they did. They changed it. But I do believe if you are a criminal and a repeat offender, you've shown one of two things. You don't care and you're going to do what you want to do. Or if you're a violent offender, that should be disclosed. And if you don't disclose that openly, then you're trying to hide it. Would therefore, like Sarge, you're going to repeat. You're going to repeat. It's a difficult situation, but where does it come in where you have to say, okay, we're going to draw the line? Is it discriminatory? Who's going to benefit? Is it going to hurt somebody? Like Sarge said, he could steal cars or whatever. That's enticing someone in the business that he's in that did that previously.
Why is somebody going to repeat? Why do you have repeat offenders? Well, why? Because there's no correction.
Yeah, that's a good question. Why?
Right. You entice them. I mean, if they were going to repeat it, if Sergeant selling cars
them?
And got BMW, what happens if the guy pulls in with a Bentley or, you know, something else?
That's
you
not why they repeat.
More. Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
No, it's not. What experience do you have with people repeating? How many years did you spend inside prison?
I didn't spend any years in prison.
Okay, then you have no way of knowing.
Fight. Oh, I know one way of knowing. Is it a repeat offender or someone that goes and rapes somebody? And they're a rapist again?
Here we go with the rape. Do you know that rapists and sexual crimes have the lowest recidivism rate in the country?
You know what? Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah, you think someone should be allowed to just walk around inside a school with kids if they want a job and they're a sexual offender?
Excuse me. They have the lowest
recidivism
rate.
Well, the thing is, though, let's remember that this law does not apply to sexual offenders.
Why not?
Okay, so that's the exception. People that are applying for job, if you're applying for a job to work with children, or the disabled or the elderly, this law does not apply to them for that reason.
They don't need to disclose that, you're saying. So they've decided you don't need to disclose the fact that you're a sexual predator, and you don't have to disclose that.
What's a sexual predator?
Joe, if you're running
what's a sexual predator? Asking you a serious question.
A sexual predator is someone that actually preys on someone that's a female, or it can be done by either sex. But my thing is with children. If you are molesting a child, you shouldn't be allowed to work in a school.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Be a bus driver.
Let me ask you a question. Okay, so when you're 19 years old or 20 years old, and you get arrested for dating a 16-year-old girl, and
you're
all right, let me finish the question. And you're arrested for this, okay, and you're charged, and you have to register as a sex offender for the rest of your life. They don't tell you the details of the crime when they do that, when you run a background check. They don't go into the case details, the trial transcripts. It just says sexual assault in the second degree or third degree. That's all it says.
Well, wait a minute. I can give you a definition of what a sexual predator is if you want to know what the legal definition is. Because you asked what a sexual predator is, and there is a legal definition for it in most states.
Well, I was asking him what his thoughts were of it. That's what I want to know. But we know what a sexual predator is, a sick son of a bitch monster that goes around.
I mean, legally,
you know,
now,
we're talking
about what a legal definition is.
The legal definition are.
And the worst part about
and
it,
the legal definition is a person.
Here's the thing, the
instance that you talked about, Joe, is not necessarily going to be considered a predator. It might be a sexual offense. But they're not a predator because there's no violence involved. Usually, in most states I've seen, including Illinois, a sexual predator is someone who did a sexually violent offense and has been a judge, whatever the criteria is in the jurisdiction, whatever that may be, that they are likely to recommit because of some pathology or mental illness or whatever.
Yep.
That is
not
the definition
offenders.
Legally in most places.
Yeah, but sex
is that true?
Leash.
Wait a minute, Sarge. Is that true? Because let me tell you something. A guy that violates a letter of restraint, or if he has a complaint against him by his girlfriend, that I believe that person can be also labeled, if not in some states, a domestic violence offender.
Let's say it's domestic violence. Some aspect of a sexual offense. Independent of a domestic violence. In other words, if the action didn't have anything to do with any domestic situation, it would still be a sexual offense.
So in other words, if a guy and his girl get into an argument, she calls the cops. Nowadays, he's not going to be considered a sexual offense.
No, he won't be considered sexual.
Okay.
Even if she has a child living with her? Even if she has a child, not even ordinary battery would qualify.
Ordinary battery is even aggravated battery.
Sorry.
It's got involved
is that
in
an
sexual aspect.
Okay. All right, a sexual aspect. Is that an accusation or a conviction?
That would be a conviction in most places.
You have to be conviction. Yeah, you can't have an accusation.
That'd be a conviction.
That's like the red flag laws. If someone calls and just makes an accusation that I have 15,000 guns
in
my bag,
that's what's happening today.
No, it's got to be a conviction.
And another problem is you have women that are accusing men of rape that actually never did it. Look what happened to the Duke soccer team type situation. I have a friend of mine that went through this. I told you guys about these false accusations, you know. But you know what? They're never even held accountable for what they do, making a false accusation like that, which then entails, once you go through that process, and if it comes to light, because no matter where
you go. That's what I was saying. That was my point.
Right. But I'm not. Yeah. But I'm saying if somebody's actually offender that does that, they shouldn't be allowed around kids. Or, you know, it's got to be a sexual offense that where someone is deliberately, and you know for a fact, you see black eyes, or you know the person was raped through a rape kit. Accusation is just that. It's an accusation. You can't find somebody guilty for that, or we'd all be in prison for something.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised.
Look at that NFL player that got accused of rape and convicted of rape, and it turned out later they got the girl and admit she just lied about the whole damn thing. She didn't face any consequences, boys. This guy not only did prison time, he lost his NFL career. Although he got to play half a season or most of the season for the Atlanta Falcons when he was eventually cleared of everything. But look at how much of his prime athletic playing days that he lost.
You know, it's funny.
Let's not even talk about Tawana Brawley.
Let's not talk about Tawana Brawley. Or like you said, Dick Lacrosse. Or that Virginia. Remember the Rolling Stones story about Virginia Tech and that that Rolling Stones piece that they convicted somebody in absentia of sexual assault, and
that's
it turned out to be more bullshit?
That's
why I'm saying,
both.
I don't want to go after Joe.
Go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You go, Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay,
on
Joe,
both
go.
Sides of the equation, people are suffering. The thing is, even if there's an accusation about, let's say, a male nanny or even a female nanny with a child, even if the person isn't convicted, I thought that person, at least on social media, but is that person has to be, isn't that person forbidden to go near schools even if there's no conviction?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we just
crazy,
had here in Ohio,
man.
We just had legislation. I just watched Congress pass. Somebody came forward with a bill because 1 in 10 people in Ohio that's convicted to go to death row is innocent. And I tried to figure out how can they determine if the person's innocent after they've been locked up, they've been on death row, and what here it comes to find out after the fact that they have already put them to death, evidence comes forward that they were innocent. So now, what do you do?
Lorianne, I did a show on that, remember, a few months ago with Cindy Prizio from the state of Connecticut, who's a part of One Standard of Justice. And she did analyze this, where actually it's based upon mostly sex offenders and stuff like that. I did a show on that, actually. She's an advocate for people of these sex offenders. It ruins their lives. It destroys their lives.
Yes.
You know,
a lot of people charged with false murders. You know, accused of being murdered or kidnappings and stuff like that, or people end up dead. But they think they figure it out because whatever, and these people get locked up and they scream they're innocent forever, but then they actually put them to death. So
because we're analyzing
everybody's background. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to ban the death penalty in Ohio because of this.
There's another aspect too that I was thinking of is the slippery slope. Here we're talking about the rights of the employer to hire somebody and to be, and to be aware of his background. I'm thinking about later on down the line where the cops and the military will also have this type of non-vetting process.
Yes.
Okay. And then what's going to happen? You know, the immigrants are going to be hired into the military. The immigrants are going to be hired more into the police force, because now you don't have to look into the background. You know, you're not finding out that they've overstayed their visas. So I think this is another part of the slippery slope process.
You're right.
I think Sarge has got to deal with that already in Chicago, because aren't they already given the opportunity as an illegal alien to carry a gun and be a police officer in Chicago?
Not quite yet, but in California, there was a couple. There's a couple places in California where they have been. They're able to hire resident green card holding aliens. There used to be most police officers that requirement. In order to be a police officer, you had to be a citizen.
Considering this.
In New York, the worst state outside of California.
Most everywhere.
Remember, Lorianne, we talked about this. Remember on your show, I think it was too, about how they remember those articles we read about the how they're hiring. They're preferably hiring illegal immigrants and to police officers' jobs, EMS workers, firefighters.
They're not supposed to be illegal, but they can hire people who are not U.S. citizens. It used to always be the case that police officer in any jurisdiction had to be a citizen. Now, if you got a green card in California and you're not an illegal alien, although they're kind of fast and loose with that, they can hire
that's
you.
Right.
Two more of them in.
There you
two
go.
More of them come
that's
in.
Right.
Yeah, like,
have
I don't
to,
have,
have
really
to
have an issue
themselves.
If they want to be like a firefighter or a paramedic, but if they're going to be law enforcement, then they damn sure better be a citizen. That's my opinion.
And speak English.
Well, that ain't the case anymore in some places.
So what are you talking about, speak English? What are you kidding? We don't speak English here.
Good God. You know, there's going to be communities that are going to be completely overrun with these illegals. Let them police
their own
communities.
Yes.
Give them a damn right. They're going to relate to them. They can speak their language.
And you think they won't be enticed by these illegals or the Russians or the Colombians? Of course they will. They'll be joining the drug trade faster than anybody else.
Yep.
Hey, yeah, but remember now, we can't check the background. Can't do a background check on them.
But
we ain't got enough troubles with police officers right now.
I like
well,
you it
got that
you know
right.
What? It slows down the marks of these RFID chip and putting all your information on it. And you know, I just think any type of government intervention into anything, any aspect of our lives when it concerns our livelihood, people making their own personal decisions and taking responsibility, I think they just stay out of it.
Yeah, which is why
you are absolutely
right. Which is why I think an employer ought to be able to take the background and criminal history of an applicant into consideration. It doesn't mean they have to automatically disqualify. They ought to be able to take it into consideration as they do any number of other factors.
And they should not be indemnified if that person commits a crime, even though they've been out of prison for 5, 6, or 7 years.
Yeah. But how do you, you know, it's hard. It's a slippery slope, like you said, Joe. It's just the scales, you know. The scales that we're putting this stuff on, you know. I think it all boils down to common sense.
Did somebody mention about, now, I used to be a union iron worker, and I worked at Trumbull County Correctional Facility here, which is a max prison. And in order for me to go inside and work, I had to take my truck. I had a welder and my torches and everything. I've got every kind of weapon you could imagine on a truck. When they're walking the dog around looking underneath with a mirror, I go, what the hell are you guys looking for? It's all in the fucking toolboxes anyway. My God. So, but they did a background check on me. They went back to the time from when I was 16 on and could tell me exactly what went on and questioned me over a fight because they wanted to make sure, you know, who's going into the prison. Like, I'm not affiliated. So there again, the employer, who my employer, told me, hey, if you have any bad stuff we should worry because there's enough iron workers to do coke and drunks and do all kinds of crazy shit up here that – we need to have someone that can go in there that's legit, that has no background problems. And I go, yeah, I got a good background. I said, I've been in trouble as a youth fighting a couple times, but I said, never had no dramatic thing. But had I not, and it's, I slipped through the crack because my boss told me, he goes, if you had gotten hired and gone through that gate and a riot broke out or something, well, this company would have been done if they'd accessed my truck and used it for, you know, some of the weapons.
There you go.
Or whatnot.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
think of war.
Oh, those guys got enough weapons in there, trust me.
they got toothbrushes with the shave down. Oh, yeah.
I need Ronnie into my hands, buddy. Right there.
Yeah, but you better believe a maintenance truck. Yeah, they can, I know how good they are to improvise the shivs in the joint. I mean, they can make a knife out of toilet paper they can pack together. I've seen them make shivs out of toilet paper, man. But look here. They got infinitely better weapons, much better and much more destructive weapons on a construction truck. You can believe that.
Eat shit from your underwear, baby.
I would imagine.
They took a cigarette butt, right? You take a cigarette butt, and you can melt it down, right? And then on the concrete, you can sharpen it almost into a razor.
Toothbrush handles. These guys are very ingenious when it comes to making chips. Trust me.
Hey, somebody got out of Alcatraz, so they can do whatever they want. Especially if you ever watch them pass information, or not, they call them kites, and they fire them out of their cell and they fly two rows down. Or
fishing. It's called fishing.
They know where they're going. It's like they're driving a remote control car almost.
Yeah.
Hell.
I will never ever dismiss the ingenuity of inmates to make improvised weapons, man. They can make weapons out of any paper, literally toilet paper. They can make a shiv
that can
slice your gut.
It's not the inmates. It's just all human beings. When human beings are caged like animals, they improvise.
Yes.
you know?
Yes, they want to try to figure a way to get out. Absolutely
yep.
right. When you're staring at walls, you want out. If you have any idea,
you want out.
Freedom.
That's true. That's true.
And if there's and if they treat it
every day.
If it's treated humanely, and Sergeant know more about this than I would. I think it was Walpole Prison where they took over the prison and they actually ran
Attica.
It better. No, not Attica. Attica. It was Walpole. Walpole.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Was
yeah,
it
Walpole?
I never heard of that one.
And wait a minute.
Yeah,
don't forget the one in New Mexico. They actually had a slaughter in New Mexico. I mean, the inmates went crazy and slaughtered many of their fellows who were snitches and rats and whatnot.
Yeah.
And caught them up in the jails.
Yeah.
That's something like 30 or something people were literally slaughtered in the jails. They threw fire bombs in the cells. They cut them up. I mean, it was
horrible. I heard Puerto Rico was real bad. Puerto Rican prisons. I heard they were the roughest.
How can you? And the
Metro Correctional Center in Atlanta. They did the same thing.
You know, you guys.
But I'm not talking about
the population of every jail. Every jail is overpopulated in this country. But you can imagine being in a maximum facility. Or let's call it first shift, total employees might be 25. Let's call it 50. To, 5,000 inmates? And the one guy that sits in one little room with all the windows around like he's in the top of an airplane or an airport traffic tower, walking around, he's got control of every door and button in that place. And that guy, everybody knows who he is, what he looks like. And if they are, if they get the opportunity, he's done. That's the first
No, it doesn't work like that. Not one
they,
guy has control like
something.
That.
When they know the guys are coming and going, they're watching them go to the parking lot. They see what they're driving. They're communicating with each other. They have, like, it's just like trying to get out of that place. They know everything that's going on. That's why they wear, how about the face shield they have to wear because they don't want the feces and stuff thrown at them
yeah,
because
the
these people wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wait for them to slide their door open to give them their food or whatever, and then they spray them with some kind of thing they make.
Yeah. What I was going to talk about a Walpole was that when they took over the prison, it wasn't like Attica. They weren't there to kill people. They were there. They took over the prison. I think they took it over for 2 or 3 days, and I think they had a congregation that was representing them to the state legislature. And I think the state legislators allowed them to continue for a little while, and as a result, the prisoners ran the prison as though they were the administration. And
was
what was written about it, I didn't.
Like
they did it better than the.
Yeah, like they wanted better towels or stuff like that. And it wasn't like they were trying to kill people, but they wanted better things for them there.
They wanted better. They wanted better. They wanted better treatment. They reorganized, I think it was in the workshops, and they did a pretty damn good job to show that if you treat human beings like humans,
right,
then they will reform, you know, eventually, hopefully.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Joe. Almost all of the prisons and jails are like that today. They're warehouses. These guys have nothing to do all day long but congregate to think of better ways to kill each other or to kill the guards or commit better crimes. It's a hustle. It's one big hustle of the human life in there, and it doesn't turn out good. And they self-segregate. It's like the tribalism. You know, you got the whites with the whites, blacks with the blacks, and Puerto Ricans with the Puerto Ricans, and the homos with the homos, it's just a very
society,
sick, dark, decadent place,
And society has these guys that are turned back into the public, and then they want to go back to that because that's what they're used to.
What's that, Lorianne?
And I think, too, being in prison, criminals that weren't, all that great at being criminals learn how to be even better criminals. I mean, look at smuggling drugs. These work programs where they hire the prisoners to go out and here in Oregon, for example, they'll have prisoners on these work programs go out into our, state parks and stuff to, clear out the dead brush and, stuff like that for fire prevention. Well, that's an ample opportunity to smuggle in drugs and cigarettes and weapons and stuff like that. They will have friends drop off those types of things in the middle of the forest where they know they're going to be working to be able to smuggle that stuff in, and they learn how to be even better criminals than they were when
Blow
they went
did
in.
That.
You know,
I can tell you how they were getting drugs into the prisoners in the state of Texas.
To the guard,
and that was in the mail.
Oh yeah, acid, absolutely. Yeah,
they ink. Not necessarily the paper itself.
The paper itself.
They would soak the paper with it.
Yeah.
And
well, they
ink
too.
So now in the state of Texas, the prisoners can't get any mail.
That's violation of rights.
No, not they get their mail. They get their mail.
Oh, they get
they
it
all have they all have tablets. All the mail goes to a central place in Texas, and it's scanned and it's sent to them, and they can read it on their tablets.
Really? Oh wow!
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Well, I guess one way of keeping the product out of there. You know, you watch the movie Blow where Johnny Depp goes. He says he goes into he was a weed smuggler taking stuff up to Boston and the colleges in that area. He goes into prison and meets somebody that's from Columbia and comes out a top-notch cocaine dealer. Yeah. You know, he said the prison was nothing but a school for criminals and drug dealers to him. And that was who he played that spot in that movie.
Yeah, George Young.
But, yeah.
Definitely,
it was a Danbury Correctional Facility. That's in Danbury, Connecticut.
Yep. So... But now you have.
And I don't think the person who's been out for 25 years will have that much of a hard time trying to prove his worth. I think the person who's been out for 5 years will have a hard time. That's why I kept
absolutely right.
Rehabilitation.
Yep. If he doesn't adjust, he wants to go back to do the same shit where he's used to.
Yeah.
That's why you have a lot of career criminals that their home is the jail. They're more comfortable there than in society.
I met guys
and that's why.
You know, and there's also another side of the coin, too. You know, this is why I'm kind of like, with this law, I'm like for it, but not so sure. But it can also work to the employer's advantage, especially if you're a corrupt employer. Because let's say you have somebody that was an accountant that was convicted for tax fraud or something, and you as an employer, and you're a shady employer. That is the kind of person that you would want to hire to do your books and hide your shady dealings. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's
investment
like,
brokers.
It's just like
the
FBI and the CIA. You know who they recruit for their cybersecurity? Their top cybersecurity people? Guess what?
Yeah,
those are convicted fucking felons for hacking into shit. They want to hire the people. They want to recruit those people.
The white hats
you
can't
know,
figure it out. They want
all
the black hats to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
So how?
But
Lori
Ann, if the shady employer wants to hire a shady accountant, and if the accountant's background is sealed, how is a shady employer going to know that he's got a shady employee?
I don't know, but we can call that company shady
as
hell.
That's the double-edged sword. And, you know, if that record is sealed and that employer doesn't know anymore, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like prevent hiring. Yeah, you know, it could work both ways. That shady employer,
what about the
now that the record
shady?
Is sealed, they're not going to know that this person applying for them
has
this conviction. You know what I'm
America.
Saying? Yeah, so it can
the
work
land of
ways.
Opportunity.
How about the guy that's the shady, the employee that's trying to get a job and get his life straight, but ends up going to work for a shady company that puts him in a position to get jacked up again, but doesn't tell him?
Then he
– And they get caught.
Then he has to refuse.
Too. Exactly.
Yeah. And he has to refuse that temptation.
My God,
that's not the norm.
Actually,
that's the that happens, but it's not the norm of things, you know.
What we
need? What about a felon? A felon can't have a firearm forever, correct?
No, not true. Not true.
They
can't
in Ohio. I know that. I don't know about. Okay, I was gonna say because what about a nonviolent felon? Someone that does not pay their taxes, but then get charged with a felony. Is it now that they're not allowed to own guns? Are you kidding?
No, every state's different. Some
states can. According to federal law, that's exactly true. Federally, if you're a convicted felon, doesn't matter what it is, even if it's a nonviolent crime, like, you know, tax evasion or some shit, you're never allowed to own a firearm again, which I am absolutely against. And
that's crazy.
And I'm absolutely against it, even if you were a violent felon. you know, guess what? You know, you did your time, you spent 20 years, and then plus probation and plus all these fines and all that shit, and you finally get all your crap together. You know, you've fulfilled your obligation to the state with your punishment. I don't think that there should be a lifelong ban on firearm ownership.
I don't know of a single gun control law anywhere in the United States that has ever prevented a determined felon from getting a gun if they wanted to use it in a crime. I don't know of one. I don't think there is such a law. I don't think they've ever worked to stop it. I mean, assuming they go to get the gun illegally. Now, yeah, I know felons get stopped from purchasing the gun legally, but if they fail in the legal attempt, you better believe they're going to obtain one illegal. They always do.
That's
well,
right.
Sergeant,
and then they get the
charge
you're
right
of, under
it's
disability.
It's back to that repeat offender thing again. If they were convicted of a heinous crime, like, you know, murder, get 25, 30 years, whatever, okay, and they're back out on the street, I don't want this person having a gun, okay?
Well,
if I have my family, my girlfriend or wife or whatever, and we're out in the restaurant or whatever, and this guy walks in, and he just got out of prison, and oh, my God, he's so proud, but he's got a gun. No. Sorry.
Well, that's wrong.
Yeah, about
In California, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, and I think 7 other states for felons. Matter of fact, this state legislators filed bipartisan bills to allow nonviolent convicted felons to regain rights to own guns. So there's like I think there's like 20 states where you can get your if you're a felon, you can still get your gun
but,
rights
you know,
back.
If you get a felony for say writing a hot check, that's nonviolent. Okay, that's bullshit. Or some marijuana possession or whatever, real low-level shit. Okay, yeah, that's definitely, they should have their rights restored, absolutely. But I'm talking about the hardcore people that don't give a
fuck.
How about this,
Gunslinger? You have a little bit of a compromise. I don't know if it's going to work, but let's say the person gets out of prison, was convicted of a violent felony. I agree, should not have a gun. Right? But let's let him have a gun. But if he commits a felony again, he no longer has the right. Now put to death.
That's it. Tanky, if you're going to commit something like
that,
you're a repeat offender, you're going to do it again.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I wouldn't say.
You can't take people's rights away. You know, rights are
I
right.
wouldn't
you
say.
You can't take their life away for taking someone else's.
I wouldn't say put to death.
The only thing a gun control law does. It's prevented from getting the gun legally. That's the only thing.
No, that's
and
true.
Sometimes that could be useful. But I guarantee you, they always get a gun to commit the crime. They simply do it illegally underground.
That's right.
Anybody who wants a gun
is going to get a gun. Here's why, Tave, I disagree with you. Tave, I disagree with you because there have been people who have been convicted of going to the death chamber on death row, and then they found out that the person is innocent. So I don't like the death penalty at all.
Well,
yeah, I agree.
If you see somebody shoot somebody in cold blood, or you see somebody run somebody down in a car, like these police officers that are putting up a roadblock, and the driver decides that he's not going to stop, he's going to speed up, and he's going to run right through them because he knows they're there.
Yeah,
that person has no position in society. Period. Because
if he goes and blows up a building and kills thousands of people, yeah, of course. You know, I mean, come on.
That's
awesome.
Well, they need to put to death.
But
they need to put to death.
But you're talking about capturing the criminal right then and there. I think Sarge will back me up on this when I say that the worst kind of evidence to present in court is eyewitness testimony.
I know.
It's supposed to be the best.
Supposed to be, but it's not.
Right.
I don't know.
Sarge, am I right?
It may not be. Well, why wouldn't it be? If everybody
DNA,
used,
DNA
you put your
is
hand
the best.
On the Bible and do all that stuff.
DNA is the best.
Just,
even,
DNA.
Eyewitness
testimony is considered direct evidence, like fingerprints or DNA. I agree with Joe that it is often the most unreliable form of direct evidence.
All right, now I got a question because this was brought up. This is the exact same thing was brought up to me with my buddy today, and I asked him. I said, well, let me ask you a question. If you have, let's say, a convicted felon who is a child molester and has to register with everything and do all, and he's done all that stuff, and this guy witnesses a robbery gone bad in a store or something, he just says he's in there buying, getting gas, and somebody comes in and shoots the cash register person right in the head, he witnesses it, he gets to go to court and testify, but yet the prosecuting attorney turns around, or the defense, and says, listen, how can you take this guy's word for it? Because he's a convicted felon, child molester, whatever, against this, and you're going to say that this guy's guilty for shooting somebody? And he
witnessed it. Well, I got
it.
One.
I mean,
listen,
what kind
to this
of shit
one.
Is that?
Oh,
that
hold
happened?
On. Listen to this one. Listen to this one, guys. This is a true story. This is a true story. I knew
well,
a guy,
any prosecutor worth his fault is going to say objection, materiality. This is irrelevant to this eyewitness's testimony. Because the only way they're going to be able to introduce the fact this guy is a convicted child sex offender is if it is relevant to his identification.
But you know, the charge, you know that the attorneys, they do that. They say one thing and then they'll say, I'll retract that. But they get it out so that the jury hears it and it right in everybody's mind. They just don't forget that shit.
Well, that's
but
true. I understand. That's true.
That well,
is,
yeah, and that's, the,
that
that's the attorney's
that's
job,
the
too.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the attorney's
listen
job.
To this story. Listen to this story. This guy was a true story. It happened to a guy I know. Right, he was riding along with his buddy, right, and the guy said, stop over my friend's house here, because they wanted to go out, you know, shoot pool. Stop over my buddy's house here, right over here, and I forgot what street it was, where he's telling me the story. And he pulls in, he goes, okay, wait here, I'm going to run in real quick, and this guy owes me $100. He runs in, he's in there for about 20 minutes, comes back out, right, he goes, he gets the money, he goes, nah, we'll come back later, maybe, you know, he wasn't home. So they go out, and they go to the bar anyway, or whatever. He goes, hey, let's go back to my buddy's house, and maybe he's home by now. They go. They start heading back. They got roadblocks set up all around the area, right? So they got pulling up to the roadblock. The guy hops out of the car, runs, leaves the guy that's telling me the story behind, right? He goes, where are you going? He just takes off. Cops, of course, take that guy in. The guy. Now listen to this. The guy that was going in to collect money from his so-called buddy, he went in, raped and murdered a 92-year-old woman. Well, hang on. He raped a 92-year-old woman. Okay, got sentenced to 60 years in prison for accessory. Just for being
there.
But
he never knew that
scene.
He went in there and killed somebody.
That's
right. Wow, man. Wow. Wow.
Yep. But
it is.
Going. How you like that, huh?
No.
Man.
But
that's
it is
bad.
The job of the prosecuting attorney, is the job of the defense attorney to present the best case and to persuade the minds of the jury. Now, there's no substitute for. Well, there is a good substitute, but there is no taking into account, or let's say we have to take into account the stupidity of the people who are in the jury box.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I gotta say this because I heard this.
Well,
this
sometimes
is very upsetting.
The judges, you know, sometimes literally judges will not read the jury the law, the actual law. The judge will say to a jury
here's
the law as I say it is the law. Here's my instructions. I'm not gonna actually show you how the law is actually written. I'm going to tell you this is what the law is, and that's what the jury has to go on. Like, they're screwed up.
Here's a bigger problem, Lori.
And the evidence they're allowed to see.
Bigger problem with this. We are told that we are supposed to be judged by our peers, okay? Your peers, in all actuality, this shit they send out to all everybody in your neighborhood, in your town, your city for, what do you call it, when you got to go down to the jury duty. Okay. Those aren't my peers. Your peers are someone that know you, closely know you. You're not family, but people you work with, people in your neighborhood. Those are supposed to be the jury of your peers that judge you, not someone that doesn't know you from across town that never saw you. They might have an agenda because you're white, you're black, or then they say, well, I don't like that guy.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty sure
well,
that there's like a definition of what your peers means. I think it's people
yeah,
in your community,
I,
people, you know.
Three of your peers are people that you
want to be on the jury.
I disagree with you, Tave.
I
disagree with you.
You're putting a jury from fucking New York to judge a case in Texas, you know.
You have to
yeah,
have
I agree with Lori Ann. Yeah.
Let
my mom and dad be on the jury.
Right?
I didn't say no family. No family. But you have to have – you're not supposed to be able to convict somebody that has no idea about them. No idea
that
about
mom
them.
Too. Huh? Yeah. No, I disagree with you, Tave. I understand where you're coming from. But the thing is, we want We want a fair jury system as much as possible. If you if you stack the jury with people who know you, they're either going to be...
No, I'm not, saying stack it like that, but understand what I'm saying is if they know you and you're a piece of shit down the street and I'm the asshole that argues with my neighbor or burns stuff and they're not allowed to burn, and he goes to court and says, oh, he's a real asshole. He's an asshole. Then you know what? The next
that's the job of a witness, not a jury member. If you witness, then you're a witness to character. Then you need to speak up and go, hey, put me on the stand. I'll speak to this person's character. That's being a witness, not being a jury member.
And I want to go after Gunslinger.
All of our family do that. Everybody's a character witness.
I want to ask a question, a political question. On this topic, is Donald J. Trump going to be tried by a jury of his peers?
Of course not.
I don't. I mean, there's
if it's Nixon and Carter,
other billionaires,
Just stop. Take a look at where he's been indicted. Every one of those indictments are in heavily Democrat areas.
Blue states, yeah.
And, you know that they are not going to have anybody on the jury that will seriously take a look at the evidence that is to be provided and stuff. So, you know, he's not going to get a fair trial.
Absolutely not.
The short answer is you're right.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what Lorianne said for a second.
There's only a few minutes left. I'm going to interrupt for just a second. Hold your thoughts. I'm going to interrupt. There's only a few minutes left before we go into No Man's Land. And I know that Valerie kind of needs to sign off, so I wanted to give her the floor for a few minutes to give parting thoughts and everything before she has to go, because she's got kiddos to attend to and stuff like that. So hold all your guys' thoughts. Valerie, I'm giving you the floor for parting thoughts.
Well, I just I don't want to say too much, because last time we got on the topic of we went nowhere. That went for half
Happy
an hour.
Birthday.
So,
she was going to go, and then she ended up being on for another like 20 minutes.
I've enjoyed listening to everybody on this last discussion. I think everybody's really covered some great points, and some of which I agree with, others I disagree. But I just thoroughly enjoy listening to everybody bring their thoughts together, whether or not they agree. Everybody keeps it respectful, and you learn something new. And it's okay to disagree, but we have to be able to have these conversations, and it's a great practice. And so I want to thank everybody for keeping it respectful, for having healthy debate, and sometimes passionate, but passion is good. Emotion can be dangerous, but passion's always good. So thank you. And
I love the way you
passion
put that.
Is always good. Excuse me, passion is always good at 38.
That's why I said that too.
Yep.
Oh, I gotta go back to my comment.
No, we're not.
Video.
I'm not opening any videos.
To the cloud if you do.
It's cloud. My party.
My man says, get your old school VCR, VHS, you know, go to a pawn shop or something.
Yep.
Watch your bingo.
Anyway.
You guys have been great.
My God.
And thank you for... a lot of laughs and a lot of good, serious conversation as well. It's been a great end to the evening. So thank you guys all for being a part of that. And I look forward to next week, that's for sure.
So do
hey,
I. So
happy
do
birthday.
I. And happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday.
I'm so glad. Like I said, I was surprised that you were actually going to be, you know, joining us tonight because, you know, I was like, hey, it's her birthday. If she's out partying, then, you know, good on her, right?
Where else are you going?
Your birthday evening here with us, it's like, that's an honor, you know. So very much appreciate. I always love having you on. And, you know, Montana Joe mentioned earlier that I have nothing but good things to say about you.
That's right.
That's the way it is. And you know, I look forward to next week with you, Valerie. So definitely happy birthday. You are much appreciated. And I'm glad you enjoyed your time with us tonight.
Well, thank you guys very much. And enjoy the rest of your conversations and evening. And I look forward to talking to you all next week.
Did we say happy 38 yet?
No, y'all.
Happy birthday, Valerie. Remember what the alternative to getting older is. Happy birthday.
And put in the show description every week.
Get me yeah. You're still 39.
I'm going to say goodbye at the end of the show. Thank
you. Well, and thank you, Joe, for trying to keep things on track, too. So I tried earlier and it was not very successful.
Yeah.
I am going to sign off of here before this goes any further down the rabbit hole and let y'all get back to your conversation.
Oh, come on. We like going down the rabbit hole with
Please.
You.
So
Nobody
I've noticed,
wants to let
sometimes...
you go, Valerie.
Yeah, that's right. We,
and you're stuck on flypaper. It's like, oh,
that's
okay,
it.
I'm on the flypaper.
Yeah. Reminds us of our younger days, you know.
Come on now. That's before the flood, Joe. For some of us.
Yeah, well.
Oh, good Lordy. My cheeks hurt.
See? Come on, Valerie. You know you're loving it. If we didn't celebrate it, you would say, oh, those guys don't love me. But we do. So, you know, you're stuck with it, all right?
Well, it has certainly been, it has turned out to be enjoyable, most definitely. And it's been fun to laugh with y'all. So, yeah, now I will go fix my Facebook settings so that my birthday is no longer visible next year. And,
oh, boy.
Okay,
oh,
so everybody
God.
Put it in the calendar
everybody.
For a reminder.
Yeah.
Next
oh, yeah.
Flag your reminders.
Yeah. You're not, that's right. You're not escaping us, Valerie. Tough.
Okay, then. That
really I'm sure we'll be talking about it next week.
Let me see. Today, yeah. Let me see. The 18th.
Current address.
Yeah,
yes,
and November
18th, yep.
2024. Okay.
Perfect.
Hmm. Go.
We'll remind you.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
All right. And who is it that's got the birthday Saturday?
Mike.
Mike.
Nobody
okay.
knows.
I'm still learning to recognize voices, so haven't quite got that down yet, but we'll have to have a birthday conversation next week at somebody else's expense other than mine. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Oh,
the focus can all be on Mike.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. When my birthday comes up, I'm certainly going to hate it when people celebrate my birthday. Yeah.
Well, what's good for the goose
but
is good
you'd
for
be
the gander.
For me if I didn't know and didn't say anything.
We're borrowing
I
that's right.
another galaxy for
that's
that.
Right.
I've got to borrow more candles.
That's it.
Oh, all right. I'm going to get off of here. I love you guys. You have a good night.
It'll be nice.
We love you.
You Joe. Too,
we'll
Valerie.
Get back to your show.
Yeah.
I look forward yeah. to next week.
Take
so,
care, Val. Okay.
You too. Bye.
So getting back to what you were saying, Lorianne, about the judge not giving
crap.
The...
my switchboard just went dead, and I wasn't able to unmute anybody that was still hanging out. is it just went dead. I was just about ready to. I was like, oh, crap, I better do it, and then done. Oh, well, okay, so we are officially
I think I had like three people that were private callers that were just listening. They didn't want to be unmuted.
So,
yeah,
can you hear me, Lorianne?
I did see three different Skype numbers just kind of hanging out. So
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I'm blocked.
So it worked out.
So I wanted to go back to what you were saying before about the judge not giving the jury instructions. What a person has to do. And this is what I did when I was in the jury box. It was a civil case, and I asked the judge, what are the consequences? What's the sentence if this person gets convicted? And he refused to tell me. And I think that's something I should know. Because if a person, for example, not in a civil case, but in a criminal case, let's say he's smoking, right? Get caught smoking some weed. He's going to get 10 years, let's say, for smoking weed. Even though I know he was smoking weed, I'm not going to convict somebody to 10 years. That is something, that's a fact that I think I, as a juror, should know. But it's not a fact of law in terms of what the judge considers to be a fact of law. But that's too bad, because a person's life is at stake. Not
some people will,
actual
Joe.
Law.
Yeah.
Some will.
For sure.
You have assholes out there that will, you know.
It seems like it's all too often that a judge can make that choice for the people that are going to decide this, make this decision, and they're the judge's poor decision not to let that know. That's awful. That's absolutely awful.
It is.
Too much.
I remember the Menendez case where the Menendez brothers got off because I forgot her name, but she was one of the best lawyers in the country, a female.
Oh,
please.
You remember that case? Wow.
Yeah. What was her name?
Wasn't her last name Garcia? Wasn't she part of the?
No. She wasn't Spanish. No. She was a WASP. The thing is that she got them off because she tried the case on the basis of abuse. Now the judge, they got a hung jury, so the judge said for the next trial, you cannot use the abuse defense, and they got convicted. Now, to me, no. Use any defense that you can in order to present the facts,
right.
even though it may be heavily weighted in emotion, still, you should have that right.
It's a fact. It should be admitted. I mean, you can't, now you start talking about eliminating history again. You know, things that happened, they want to take things away. And speaking of the Mendez brothers, I got basketball cards if you'd like to buy one with Mark Jackson. The two of them are sitting on the front row. Of the picture of that guy's basketball card as a 91, I think it is, a hoops basketball card that's worth, I don't know, about $150 just because them two clowns are sitting there.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? They're sitting in the background?
They're on a card. Yeah, they're in the crowd. They're sitting in the very first couple seats, you know, in the front row on the basketball court watching the game, and somebody got their picture snapped. The guy, the player, ain't worth a shit. But because those two kids are on there, that's the last picture that they were taking in public. Being before they went to, but the card's worth money because of that shit.
Mendez brothers.
Well, you know, that's all there is to it. You want to hide facts about things to take away history or take away the you're ruining someone's future is what you're doing, because that's affecting everything if you don't let the facts are what we all want, truth.
We want all of the facts. Now, if the prosecuting attorney is a better salesman and the defense attorney, then so be it. If the defense attorney is a better salesman and the prosecuting attorney, so be it. But what we really need are educated, intelligent citizens, which, unfortunately, we're not anymore.
Well, that's the whole subject.
You know, what that goes
to say, their whole future should be, ruined based upon their conviction.
Joe's right. Joe's right. We need more citizens that are educated and a little bit sensible to stay out of court, stay out of jail. Stop putting yourselves in positions to be that person.
People don't put themselves in a position to be that person all the time.
Some more than most. Yeah.
Not more.
I know. I had.
It's all choice. It's all choice. Be
no,
what you
it's
want
not.
To do. You have to be. Yes, it is.
No.
When you're young, your choices are dependent upon your arrested development. A lot of research scientists are saying now that even if until you hit the age of 25, you still don't have the real power to make the conscious decisions
that's
that you
right.
should.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's viable or not, who really knows? The thing is that when you're young and you're hanging out and you're stupid, I think that should be taken into consideration. And I also think for 25, 30, committing crimes, your maturity should also be taken into consideration as well.
If the parents should be held accountable as well. If you're not held accountable, right and wrong.
Well, that's true. Then why are the rats trying to get people to vote at 16 now?
Right.
Hey, 18 bad enough? If their minds ain't developed enough to make a mature decision, why in the hell do we want them to vote at 18?
That's it.
Because they're not. They don't have the capacity to make a good decision. It's part of the
end. That's right.
Everybody here knows it's all about conquer, divide, and chaos.
Yep.
So they're giving the 16-year-olds.
New world order.
That's right.
Yeah, they'll say something that will show them, like, hey, we're going to have free video games next month starting this day. That's what you guys need to vote for me for. And they'll get that vote from someone at 16. Something
and Sarge, you
makes your eyes sparkle.
There's one thing that you can put on that that bill, you know, to make it legal for 16-year-olds to vote is it's legal for them to go purchase firearms.
Hey, at 18 you go to jail. At 18 you're not allowed to buy cigarettes. You're not allowed to buy alcohol. And at 18 you can get drafted by the military. But they don't. But they won't let you go by six. You can't make a decision at 16. You know, you get your driver's license. I got mine at 16, but I was.
Yeah, mine 15.
Times are different. You know, times are way different. And now the kids, they can't keep their heads off the phone to drive.
That's exactly.
They don't know
the case
how to
use I was going
to
make.
They want to phone with everything.
Well, look. You also need cops that know the law. Okay.
Yes.
Most of these cops out here don't know the fucking law. They're dumbasses. Sorry about that, but they are. Okay. They, you know, there's this one on YouTube. It's out in Arizona. Nick Fridays with Nick. He's a deputy sheriff for traffic or something. Man, he keeps telling you, driving is a privilege. It's not a right. Bullshit. Bullshit.
Yep.
It is a right. Okay.
That's right.
See how they they tell the public, oh, it's a privilege, and we can take your driver's license, and blah, 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 blah. When it's an actual, it's a right, like breathing. Okay?
You have a right
driving
to travel.
Whatever you want to do, however you want to put the word, is a right, not a privilege. Gun ownership is a right, not a privilege.
That's
right. I agree with you, but the thing is, I agree that we have the right, you know, for mobility,
travel,
transportation, et cetera. But the thing is, it still has to be regulated in some way when you're on the road.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just like a gun. If you're
only
first time
if
you're,
only
by.
If you're a it only has to be regulated if you're a corporation.
No, I'm not talking about registering. I'm talking about stop signs and traffic lights. We have to have them.
Well, same thing with a gun. If you're a first time gun buyer. You just don't out there and get, don't buy a gun. Take the safety courses that comes along with it. Because deadly weapon. Okay?
I don't believe.
But, you know, it makes sense to, you know, you buy it and then you go out and you get some training with it. Because it's not just the gun training itself. It's the training with your own weapon that you just bought. Familiarity with your own weapon.
It's like you're using
and
a tool.
Handling it and, you know, yeah, and the repetitiveness. Like, I know from the feel of it. I don't have to look. I don't have anything. I know, you know, I can tell because I've practiced with it. This is my firearm. I'm familiar with it. And you might not be able to pick up another firearm and operate as accurately, but at least with your own, you know, then you stand more of a chance.
Well, then you already know the concept of safety where you don't point it up at somebody in the room. You know, you don't keep your booger finger off the trigger. Simple things like that.
You always check it.
It applies to all guns.
Every time you pick it up, you always check it out of habit.
Oh, yes.
Even if you just put it down for 10 seconds, it's just such a habit.
Don't leave it on your nightstand.
Well, tell that to Kevin Spacey.
You know when to shoot and when not to shoot legally. When to shoot and not to shoot. Shooting at a target is nothing. When you're shooting in a self-defense situation, you better know what. You better know something, or they will barbecue your ass.
You're right. A lot of people think it's a self-defense. You're not going to jail. No, you are going to jail. But if you did it, however you want to, vicariously or whatever, if you did it badly, you're going to pay for it. Self-defense, castle law, all that stuff. If you don't know what's going on, you're. And the worst part about all of it is the ones that leave their stuff laying around with children, they have access to it, where you see these little kids, and all they do is just pick it up. You know, they don't have
they grab it and pull the trigger. And just recently, right outside of Dallas in Mesquite, Texas, there was this shop owner. It was a gold and silver place, okay? He had been robbed or attempted robbed 3 times, got into a gunfight every time. And the cops didn't take his gun. And this is the third one happened last week. Two armed thugs tried to get it, jumped, you know, went in there. He was right there. And, man, he started shooting before they started shooting. Didn't take their gun. It's
good for him.
They got
to play that video outside that store so all the other idiots know that when they go in there and try to rob him, they're going to get shot at. That's why they don't rob bank detectives either. Everybody's got a gun.
Yeah, that's a damn good idea.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but
and then at the same time, the opposite is
they want to take them from us. And you take that same exact scenario here in Oregon, going to have a very different outcome. I'm just telling you right now.